This is Uncommon Cast RX 110, two Tomaris with the same gun. Get your fix with the Uncommon Cast RX, your cure for the Kamen Rider show. Join us as we discuss the bravest of all the fighters! And those Heisei guys, too. With burning justice in our souls, let's tear it up!
I'm Aleph.
I'm Amit.
And I'm Sono.
Today we're putting Drive to the Test as speedy as we can as we cover the Nira Trilogy. Episodes 34 through 36, and that's Who Killed Tomari Isuke, Why Are They Imprisoned, and Where on the Side of Justice Will the Bullet Fall?
Yeah! All of these questions.
Yeah, they're wonderful.
Are they?
Yeah, that last one, like, I feel like I realize that is probably a very accurate and direct translation. They could have gone a little more themey with it.
I think that might have been overtime just saying, like, eh, here, have this super literal translation. It's terrible.
They'll probably fix it for 36.
Yeah, I'm just saying, in fairness, eh. Like, if I was over there, I'd just be like, you know, whatever, fine.
All Kamen Rider episode titles are crap. They're never good. All episode titles are terrible. Especially once we started doing these themed episode titles.
Okay, those have been crap. But
which
I really
blame
liked.
Double for. If I blame Double I for really anything, like, it's that.
I really did like the ones in Forza, where everything was, you know, four characters long. I thought that was neat. And in Kuga, where everything is two syllables, which just really gave, like, all the titles were really punchy at that point. Just like, boom, boom.
I mean, I'll give that I like the conceit of it, but it's not, it doesn't always work.
No, that's true. That's true. But I'm a big fan of a conceit.
So hopefully Jonathan will join us in a couple minutes. In fact, let me go ahead and, I'll message him after you guys are answering questions. But let's go ahead and jump into it and start in on them questions. Once I find them. Okay, so question one is this. How does episode 35 work for you? Are you satisfied with the fact that so much focus is being put on the SCU? What do you think about Sanjo through Nira making the SCU members appear part of a conspiracy by having provided instances where they were in close contact with Rowan Mutes?
I actually really liked 35. It's odd because something about it all feels slightly off to me, but I think that's mostly this lingering sense of this feeling like a mid-season conflict that's meant to kind of spark the character development that usually builds from the mid-20s to late 30s. But here we are at 35, and we're only just now getting to this huge event that's meant to show kind of solidarity between the SCU as a whole, and that they're all standing around our hero for support. So it's kind of a little late in the game for this to be happening, but I do enjoy it. I really do love...
Just yes? one bit. Has that not been a very common complaint in the last couple years of Kamen Rider? Like, just a lot of, it is really late for this.
Yeah. Again, I only made it halfway through Gaim, but it was a problem in Forza. I don't remember if it was a problem in Wizard. Wizard had so many other problems. As much as I do love it. I really do love Wizard, but it had some problems. I do like that it was Honganji that was given the whole big Nira reveal. Instead of Shinosuke, he's been kind of in this silent protector role the whole time, playing the Master Roshi, coming off as a buffoon to hide how competent he is. But, again, we really should have been given that before this recent handful of episodes, because the early to mid-30s are kind of late to reveal that this dude knows what he's doing. I do applaud the use of everyone's kind of Roymude focus episodes to kind of build on this event. I feel Oda might be a little bit of a stretch because it was his superior of, like, decades ago where everyone else's connections were more solid, either through, like, a romantic connection with Rina or everyone else being directly involved with Roimudes. But he was involved in the case, so I can kind of let it slide. It's a nice way of bringing those bits of the story back around, and it's kind of a way of Nira taking really personal stabs at the whole team. Because again, with Rina and Ota, these are people that are really important to them. Kiriko also, since hers was Chase. And with Q, it's something that happened to him that was important to him. So by bringing that all up, it kind of makes his double cross sting even more. Just how personal of a stab it is at all of them.
Which, like, I will say, I really liked. I mean, if we're going to have a slimy villain, which, I mean, look, his sudden and inevitable betrayal was, I don't know, a surprising, like, sunrise. But I did like how he's just being a jerk with all this. Just smug and creepy and nasty. I really do like that. And I'm right with you, Sono. I really enjoy that we're bringing all this stuff back together. I just wish that somewhere in there that he had actually brought up, oh yeah, they had this encounter with a Roimude, and Oda straight let that dude go, and if that's not damning evidence, I don't know what is.
Well, I mean, we all want the show to call that out. We wanted it to call it out when it happened, and we wanted to call it out now, but it's not.
Yeah, it's not going to happen, because frankly, I don't think anyone in the writer's room sees the problem. I kind of wish that they would have called out a few more of those things, because there's something to be had about the relatively insubstantive nature of justice when you come at it from a legal perspective, what with how a legal perspective is the blunt force, because that's all it can be, versus the nuance that the Tokujo division is trying to bring in, because they're good people trying to enact justice and not just go by the law.
It was a breaking news broadcast. The newsroom itself may not have had all of that information.
Well, yeah, exactly. But
the press conference hadn't happened yet.
It's just one of those things that I thought would have been an extra nice little knife twist. But
oh no, wait, this is all indeed during the press conference that was all revealed. Still?
Well, it's one of those things where I'll forgive a lot if this is, again, if this is a direction and going somewhere. Because they've been feeling on the cusp of going somewhere for the last while, and I just need them to pull the trigger.
Cusp of going somewhere with 001, and look where that's sort of going somewhere. Happened, and as a result, this is happening. Mm. So I guess as a result, another thing is going to happen when this is over. But it's not really a smooth transition between things.
It really isn't. I mean, again, it feels like here at the end they're trying to figure a thing to do, but I just want them to do it. Like, it's what you've said, like, just doing it is no longer enough. They have to do it well.
Yeah, and, like, we're in too deep.
Yeah, like, here's the thing. Shoaikawa came in and Blade when I had completely written off Blade. I was just like, okay, episode 25, I'm done. I'm out. And then I get called back in for 30, and I'm like, oh, okay. And then the next 20 episodes are just art.
Well, I mean, that is Aikawa. That is what he does when you let him end a series.
But, like, they need to bring him in to end this thing quick, or they just need to shoot it in the head. Like, they just need to take it out behind the shed. And just, like, you know, pull some old Yeller on it, because it's just suffering and flailing, and someone needs to either get it to a hospital or get it to a shotgun, which is really not a nice way to put it, but it's the only one that really comes to mind for me.
Yeah, it's not very nice at all, but it makes sense because the rabidity cannot be repealed, or rabidness, whatever. Like, there's no cure, so it's kind of, you're left to a bad choice.
Exactly, because, like, here's the thing, all the cast, the special effects people, the suit actors, all the people who are tasked with realizing this stuff are given their role. They're doing some good work. I mean, the cast, they are making this stuff sing as well as it can. But they're not being given anything good.
Yeah, the thing is, no matter how well you sing, if you're not putting notes in a good order, it doesn't really work.
If the lyrics are, I don't even know what a bad song sounds like anymore.
The second Go Busters opening.
Yeah.
Hey.
That is the worst song I have ever heard in my life.
I don't know. You've heard the Agito opening.
The second Go Busters opening is easily the worst opening to anything.
Wow, I need to check that out.
It's bad. It may just be the juxtaposition to the first opening, because that is really good.
But I
also remember it just being a really bad song.
It was definitely a huge disappointment when they shifted. Let's see, so...
Well, that's Go Busters for you. And again, I love Go Busters, I do, but disappointment when things shifted is pretty much the name of the game.
I can't argue there. Okay, so let's see. How does 35 work? You know what? It's interesting that you're bringing up Go Busters, because we've had like a mid-season finale here, practically, and it's shifted the direction of the show a little bit. I had some more thoughts on that. I guess I want to say I liked it. It is weird. It feels different. And I guess different good. But it does feel, once again, we just had this a few episodes ago, like 4 episodes ago, like it is becoming a different show, and it's not a very smooth transition. I think that was already said, but I'm saying it again.
It's still true, isn't it?
Yeah.
But overall, I really was satisfied. I think the worst thing about 35 and 36 is how weakly they're tied to 34, because like there is a connection, but it's just barely there. But anyway, so this episode, I enjoyed it overall. I thought it was interesting that they started with the incident and then worked up to the incident being imminent or whatever at the end there. And as far as tying in all the SCU stuff, all the personal Romulan encounters, I thought that was really clever, and it made me think, wow, that was really smart. And when you know you're planning a show and it's going to last this long and it'll have these certain principal characters throughout, you can make that happen. And then I wondered, did they make that happen, or was it purposeful, or was it clever scrambling? Because either way, it's commendable, but
yeah,
it would have been better had it been...
I'm willing to believe that it was intentional.
I'm willing to believe it, but it's just one of those things where, again, they could have pulled it off a lot more artfully.
I have no proof, but, these aren't first-time writers.
Mm.
Events in previous shows they've worked on have come back later in the show. So, I'm willing to believe maybe they did that on purpose.
And yeah, I want to believe it too, and I'm pleased about that. So it's a really good thing. I just wonder if maybe again it should have happened earlier in the series, because now we're at like 3/4 through, it feels like, and I'm just wondering, well, when they deal with Neera, what's next? Is it just going to be like happy, jealous, and adoring? Like, are we just going to have to deal with those three for the rest of the show? And like,
well, I think we're probably going to this arc. Either this arc or the next one is probably going to get rid of Brain. Then we'll probably do some stuff. I want to believe Medic first, but just the fact that Brain has gone full in on Neera.
And I think if we're gonna get rid of Medic, we should probably give her a plot or a character arc of some kind.
Eh.
I mean, look. I mean, I'm not a fan of her deal. I'm not a fan of her monster form. Man, I'm not a fan of that monster form.
Yeah, that was disappointing that we had to look at that again.
Yeah, really. Like, and I'm just like, okay, so when that one goes yellow, that's just going to be even more boring on top of being ugly.
I do like the yellow brain suit, though. I thought that did look good. I liked it.
You know, maybe it's that I'm colorblind a bit, and I'm just like, you know, it's the same, it's just yellowish. But if they can give her an arc, a thing she wants that is not just heart, that'd be lovely.
Oh. I was going to say, well, there's heart, but you just took it away.
Or, you know, she can go after heart in an interesting way. We can find out, what is the promise number? Is this one of those things where only X number of people can get into heaven? How would they even know? Have they been around long enough to develop a prophecy religion?
They've been around...
Well, if you go by Tron logic...
This promise number thing is getting weirder and weirder as it happens, where apparently, according to what Brain is saying in this, none of them are guaranteed to be in this promise number. Even our three leader Roimudes are not guaranteed to be part of this.
Yeah. That was the impression I got as well.
What does he... Because he's saying, like, oh, if I can get Ultimate Evolution, then I can become part of the promise number. So, what does that mean?
It's a thing they probably should have explained before now.
Yeah, it's just... I had a discussion on Twitter about this, about comparing it to the Gaia Impact. Just to keep things neat and within the same writer. Apparently it was explained pretty late what specifically the Gaia Impact is, but there was always very much a sense of, if it happens, it will be bad and everything will be over. Whereas with the promise number, I get no sense of danger from that. Because for all I know, it could be like six Roimudes sitting in a room playing poker. And this
maybe
has all just been like one long thing. Well, it's just, it doesn't sound like an event. There's no sense of what could happen or that it will be bad and hurt a bunch of humans. It's just, okay, well, now there's a specific number of us for whatever we're going to do, I guess.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that there are only 108 Roimudes, because then saying that there is a special number that seems to be exclusive means that they're dwindling their...
Yeah, like...
numbers, and, like, why would you do that when you're already, like, a small population who's trying to take over the world?
Yeah,
basically.
Like, I don't get that. Like, okay, promise number 42, Hitchhiker's Guide jokes, but, I mean, 42, say the promise number is 42. Why is 42 better than 108?
Well, because, like, I think the closest thing I could think of was... Like, the promise number would be the minimum you would need to have ultimately evolved to create a sapient god intelligence. And this is me, like, this is nothing in the work. This is just me going completely just off the rails. But, like, if they all bring these singular emotions together, because, you know, you can get a singular emotion that is completely unattached to anything else, right? Because that's how emotions work.
Oh, definitely. 100%. That's exactly how emotions work.
You know, but, you know, then you get your promise number in a room. They're all ultimately evolved, and they all just sort of, you know, join together into a single composite entity, which is a fully realized new intelligence. But frankly, that's a lot more, like, Evangelion, and, like, I think something that probably should have been in Gaim, come to think.
Yeah, I mean, but there's no... God. There's absolutely no explanation. With Double, we have the Gaia impact. With O's, we know this is all going to come down to a bunch of monsters punching each other in the face, because one of our main characters is a bird monster. With Forza, it's like, okay, this guy is evil. He wants to do a bad thing. And we learn more about what that bad thing is the closer we get to the end. It's like, okay, well, he wants to go beyond humanity. Oh, he's going to kill a bunch of people to do that. Oh, he's going to kill a bunch of high schoolers to do that. Okay, not good. Wizard, we start heading toward the second Sabbat. We know how bad that is because we know what happened in the first one. So honestly, of all of these, Wizard seems to be the best so far.
Well, as far as clarity of threat.
Yes, because Wizard just... And that's what I'm talking about right now, clarity of threat.
Yeah.
Because Wizard presents episode one. This is what happened. This is what's going to happen again.
Yep, and that's just... And then, okay, Gaim, that is a clear reason not to do the thing.
I don't know where Gaim went. I don't know what the final threat in Gaim was. But up to the point I was watching, it's like, oh, the world might end. That would be bad. We don't want that.
The final threat was... Gaim himself, so...
Yeah, well...
I'm a really big fan of Cannibal Saracenian's thing where it's like, look, this is basically a sympathetic version of Shadow Moon. That's a paraphrase going by how I read it, but...
Yeah, it's really disturbing. Jonathan,
hello,
why don't you...
I'm here. The man!
Yo!
Legend!
Would you like to weigh in, especially since you just watched so much Drive? Like, what do you think the promise number... could be, should be, is. Do you think it sounds threatening, like it's a dramatic event that's going to happen, or what do you get from, what sense do you get of promise number?
It's hard to say. I mean, I find it very strange that brain and heart don't even really seem to know. That's the first confusing part. I mean, I don't know. It seems to be that it's like a certain number of room you to reach the final evolution. I get that would be my guess, but I don't know. Because in the start of the series, it very much seemed to be about kind of, we just have to make, like, we just, it's like just something we have to get. And it didn't seem very difficult, but now it seems they've kind of changed up and they've kind of said, actually, this is like a task that's non-trivial to do. Because in the initial part of the series, it just seemed like they just had to keep sending out more Roamutes, and eventually they'd find, you know, and that was the other odd thing, is that it seemed predetermined previously, whereas now it seems to be like it's kind of a free-for-all. Which is a bit of a strange way to go. I don't know. I want them to go down the route of like making it non-threatening in the sense of being like it's the room you to become most human or something. But like I don't know, and then maybe like pervert that with like what it means to be most human. Kind of the route they were going down with what Nira says in 34, where he's like, you know, you don't understand what, you know, at the heart of humanity is everyone just waiting to become a monster. Like, I kind of, like, as a route to go down for your villains, I kind of really like that, because they're taking it kind of like, these are monsters, but actually we're making a real point, but I don't know whether they're going to go down that route or not. I wish they would, but somehow I don't know. I think that's the kind of the thing they're going for, maybe.
I have to say that Shinosuke's response to that was pretty friggin' awesome.
Hell yeah. That whole scene in that, like, I don't know, I mean, where even are they in that scene? I never quite could work that out. It was like a kind of really small car park or something. But
it
like,
was, I think it was the miniature Guggenheim in Tokyo.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Fair enough.
Some stairwell, maybe?
yeah, who knows? But like, just the whole, like, that whole scene is just amazing. Because Honganji is also awesome. Like, that's, you know, he's just cool. Like,
this is true.
Like, He's basically the second Doctor from Doctor Who. He's Patrick Troughton. I love it. Well, no, because it is basically that. He's just, you know, he's... I just wish that they'd kind of shown more of his more serious side earlier on, but, like, But then, to be fair, like, have you done question one? Can I talk about that? Or, like...
Oh, yeah, please go ahead.
Because it's interesting that they're now kind of putting... they're pulling the focus on special crimes in a way that they kind of haven't before, but I still kind of wish we'd had more time with them. They still don't feel like people we don't, like, we've had their focus episodes, but I don't know. It seems, if anything, I would argue that this is a lot more about Shinosuke than it is about anybody else. Like, even Go and Chase have taken a backseat to a great degree. Like, everything is about, there's no, like, like, the thing with Go and Bano is, like, really thrown off into the background. The villains are kind of thrown off into the background. Chase is kind of just doing things. There's not, like, everything is about Shinosuke and his dad and this case 12 years ago and everyone else, even, like, Kiriko and people in SCU are really kind of secondary to the plot that's going on, which in some senses I kind of like, because actually it feels like a plot that can carry that much focus, but, like, I do wish that they would give a bit more focus to these secondary characters, but then, like, we've said before, you know, like, Sanjay writing for large casts is, you know, not, he tends to leave out a few of them, which is kind of what's happening here. But I don't know, I'm kind of in two minds about it, because I'm in some senses I'm really happy that we're getting this, like, this depth of, or like, we're getting this focus on Shinosuke, which is turning SCU into fugitives, and I really like that kind of idea, this sort of, we were on the side of the law and now we're kind of not, but also that, but then also you kind of feel bad because you're like, actually there's a lot that, like, I really like the Shinosuke Chase partnership. If anything, I think I would do without Go and just have the two of them, to be honest.
Yes. Cause,
like,
yeah.
Like, that would have been the idea of kind of like the idea of them being the antithesis of each other and then joining together to form a team. Because, like, the teamwork between them in 35 when they're fighting Brain or Nira. Nira's Roy Mute form anyway. But, like, the teamwork between them is really cool, and we haven't really seen that before. Like, they're not really, like, the idea of all the Riders kind of fighting as a team is still something they haven't really got to yet, and I wonder if they're not going to go down that route, because I do like that in in Fies and in other series where you have multiple Riders where they actually, like, where they fight together and show actually that they can kind of play off each other is really cool. But, like, Go is really superfluous at the moment, and I don't know if that's a writing thing or whether that's just something that's kind of born out of necessity, but I mean, I can't say I think the show is worse off for it, which is sad, but seemingly true all the same.
Well, they sold all the Go toys they're gonna sell at this point.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't think he's getting any more forms or anything, so.
No. I just want Honganji to become Mark. I think that would be, like, the ultimate awesome.
Yeah,
like,
why haven't we given him a belt?
That'd be cool.
Yeah, like, yeah, he had one on for a sec.
I honestly thought he was going to henshin. I was like, please. I was like, there was, like, I was really, really divided, because one part of me was like, please just henshin, because it would be amazing. But on the other hand, I was like, but if he can do it in Kiriko Khan, then that's really saying something, and I really don't want Mikoshi saying that. So, you know, like, it was, like, in my head, I was like, I want it, but I don't. And it was infuriating. But I think it's interesting the route they decided to go down, because the one thing I did want to say about the way that 35 went down is that it actually felt like a police show, which is something that the series hasn't really, like, I don't think they've really hit that button right a lot. And I think it's actually interesting that they kind of, now they're 35 episodes in, they kind of found their feet somehow, and they're actually trying to make it into at least a crime drama, if nothing else. Like, actually felt like there was something going on. So I think that's good. It worries me that it's taken 35 episodes to get to this point. I'm still standing by my theory that the first 20 episodes of this season were, like, an experiment in writing, and they kind of went, like, oh, there were some ideas, and just threw loads of them away when they got to, like, episode 21, and were like, right, now the serious show begins. It was, like, 20 minutes of filler. Like, I could see that. Because I do wonder if that is the thing. Like, they were just like, we've got all these ideas, but we're not quite sure where they are, and, like, just because of time, they didn't really, I don't know. But it's a theory I've had, and I do wonder if it has any basis in fact at all, but it's interesting to consider.
Hmm. All right, well, should we move on to question two?
Sure.
Yes,
sure.
We can do that.
All right, does anyone have anything to say about lying to Kiriko about AI Bano?
Oh, I thought you said Albano. I was like, what? has he turned Spanish? What is going on here? Like,
actually, that Al would be, forgive me, it'd be a Mid-Eastern language for that.
Sorry,
the Bano.
Which, look, like, I gotta say, that actually sounds kind of badass.
See, I thought it was going to be like Ibano with a lowercase I. See, I was going for that. Although I can't tell if it's an iPad or if it's another tablet. I feel bad that the kind of the Apple Mac fanboy in me can't tell at one glance if it's an iPad or not.
It seems a little small to be an iPad.
I was going to say it looks like a Nexus.
They do have smaller iPads now, I think. So I don't know. Though it may be an iPad just because Toei seems to generally use Apple products.
I think what they really do is just grab, like, somebody on the set who has one and say, like, oh, give us that. We need that for this scene. And, oh, okay. Well, can I have it back?
The thing is that Ankh had an iPhone and an iPad. Tomoko had an iPad.
Go has a gold iPhone 6 in 35.
Yeah, so
you see quite prominently.
it seems to be that they mostly, as far as things like tablets go, they tend to use Apple products, and they'll shove iPhones. You'll see a pretty wide variety of phones.
But they're sponsored by JPhone, aren't they? And like, or they have been in the past. I know in Fize they were at least.
I know there were a couple SoftBank phones in Forza. But overall, they see, as far as non-phone technology goes, they seem to use Apple mostly.
Well, they follow the universal law of movies that the good guys use Macs. Like, it's just seemingly a universal rule.
Ouch.
It's like watch Independence Day. They bring down a flying saucer with an Apple with a PowerBook, I think it is, or something like that. So it's a really weird universal movie rule, because I thought that in Ryuki when I saw them all using Macs in the newspaper, I was like, oh, it's that trope recurring again. I just thought it was interesting. I just thought it was an odd thing to point out. I'm sorry, I'm derailing the podcast. This is why I shouldn't have been on the show in the first place. Anyway, back to the questions.
Okay, well, back to the issue of lying to Kiriko. Go has been trying to cover this thing up the whole time, and I still just don't know why. Chase and Shinosuke have agreed to it, which is odd because they're both a lot closer to Kiriko than they are to Go. But they aren't questioning what negative effects this would have on Kiriko if she knew. And if they did, I would honestly be fine with this. It's just, everyone's just like, okay, we'll just not tell her this clearly important thing for whatever reason. And a thing that's bothering me is I don't know if Bano is Kiriko and Go's father, where, like, Bano went off to die or build robots or whatever, and their mother just started using her own last name with them, or if he's just Go's father and Go was taken in by Kiriko's family. If it's the former,
because that is the confusing. Sorry to interrupt. Because that is the confusing thing. Like, does Kiriko even know who her own father is?
Yeah,
that's the kind of, like, it doesn't. That's not never been explored. Like, she's never had any scenes where she's like, oh. You know, our parent, like, but then they go to their parents. Is that their parents' grave they go to in episode?
It's both 12? Parents, but we've only ever seen the mother's name.
Okay, interesting.
I mean, if it's the former, where he's also Kiriko's dad, I can see the reason being that Go doesn't want Kiriko to think badly of their father, or for people to know about this, since. Things parents do can seriously affect social and professional lives of their children in Japan. Kind of family lineage is still a big thing. And maybe he's worried about Kiriko losing her job over this if the cops find out that her dad built murder bots. If it's the latter, where he's only Go's father, the only reason I can think of is kind of along the same lines, where he doesn't want Kiriko to hate him because of what his father did. And I could honestly accept that if anyone talked about this ever. There's no reason behind anything that we've been given, and in order to be able to see Go's side, even if we're not going to sympathize with it because he's still a jerk, but we need to know what's happening in order to be able to accept it. Like, I don't support anything Asakura did in Ryuki, but there's a lot of cues that imply that he was abused in childhood that lead to why his actions are what they are.
Which is a recurring motif in that series.
Yes, so you can understand what Asakura is doing, even if you're not in support of it, which you shouldn't be because he's a terrible person.
Basically the worst.
Yeah, pretty much. But you understand why he's doing it, and that makes him a believable character.
Yeah, there's a very wide gap between condoning and understanding, I would say, in these shows. You can understand why Darth Vader might want to conquer the universe. That doesn't mean that you would agree. It's just, it's interesting.
Hey, he's just trying to bring order, okay? Order and peace. Don't you remember that?
No, I do. No, come on.
I have brought peace and justice to my empire. Sorry. I was kind of making fun, even though I love the movies. It's still funny.
Very true. Yeah, like I don't know. I'm in agreement with you. I mean, to be honest, the biggest problem with this is that Go gets no screen time at all. Like what, 35? He was in it for like what, 2 minutes, if that.
Yeah,
like,
but
he has, like,
probably.
This, he didn't even have
is
a fight.
That a
or anything
problem?
Like. No, oh no, no. I'm not for a second saying, but like, I'm not saying I want more of Go because, as Soda says, he's still a jerk. But like, it doesn't. But what I mean is, like, they're not even, you know, all that aside, they're not giving any chance for this to even be developed. Like, we've not even seen him have a meaningful interaction with his father. Like, all, like, he's had, like, what, a conversation that amounts to about, you know, like, 15 seconds. Like, there's no point at which you see him meaningfully interacting, or, like, oh, hardly ever meaningfully interacting with anybody except maybe Chase. And that relationship's really, like, confusing and not even at all explored, because as far as I could tell, he still doesn't like him, so
and the,
why
the
he's
thing is, Go shouldn't have any real feelings about his father, because Bono, did Bono, like, die 15 years ago?
The timeline doesn't make any sense.
No, nothing makes any sense.
Okay, but I mean,
it literally doesn't.
Does it? Is that what it seems like? Is that?
No, I mean, to me it seems like, well,
when,
I'll present my
when
opinion.
When do we think
others.
Bono died?
Right before the global freeze.
Okay.
So it's 6 months ago, or like whatever the...
8-10 months ago now, I think.
Okay.
No, but
like less than a year
that's
ago,
when
then.
That's when Krim was put in the belt.
No, Krim was put in the belt 15 years ago.
Wait, what? That doesn't make
exactly.
any sense.
The Wilmutes actually came to life 15 years ago
after he gave them
the courier drive system, and the global freeze happened 6 months before
okay,
the
but
show
wait,
started.
Why? How did Krim die before Bono? That doesn't make the slightest bit of sense.
Because that's why he built Proto Drive, I think. But I agree. I like the timeline before the show makes no sense whatsoever.
No, if Bono died 15 years ago, mm-hmm. Go was 4.
Yep.
No, that's why I'm saying Bono died. I think to me it sounded like
then,
he died
then,
at the
minute,
global freeze.
Wait. Point of order. But then if he died, then wasn't Go in America for like more than a considerable like?
That's a good question. He was definitely in America for more than six months.
He was in America before the global freeze started, or at least that was my reading of the situation, because you don't have, like, so it makes even less sense.
Okay, I'm pulling up episode 7, so keep talking, guys. I remember before we found out it was 15 years ago, it sounded like Krim told Shinosuke, okay, this is what happened. My friend, Dr. Bono Tenshiro, convinced me to give him the courier drive system. I thought it might end up making his robots come to life and murder everybody.
But
I gave it to him anyway.
I love your paraphrasing. Why do you not write this, Jack?
Here's the thing. If that might be an outside... I'd actually like him. I would not be constantly like, yes, let's make sure that everyone knows he's the villain of the series. Like, he just said, oh no, I'm dumb. I thought there was a good chance.
I made a terrible mistake.
There was a slight outside chance that it might lead to the mass destruction of everybody on Earth, but, you know, we let that go.
look, the important thing that we have to focus on is I'm not to blame, okay? It's not my fault, I just did everything that made it happen, okay?
But, I mean, Bono is the bad person, ignore the fact that I helped him. You just ignore that.
You know, that is kind of how a lot of this stuff is going. Which is really like, you bear some responsibility.
It makes no sense for Krim to have died first. That makes absolutely no sense.
Nope.
See, because I remember us talking about how long it took him in his belt form to build Proto Drive, because he built Proto Drive 6 months before. He finished it right before the global freeze.
See, that's not the impression I got at all. I got the impression that Proto Drive was running around before the global freeze started.
The night of the global freeze was when
Proto Drive died. That was what
yeah,
that was
the thing
I got.
He had a whole bunch of adventures before that, fighting the Proto Roimutes.
When they were like being more secretive and trying to like, tell,
and
you
I,
know, trying
I
to, like,
figured at that point he had Rena. He had Rena and what's his face, Harley.
Q.
No, not Q.
Oh,
Harley.
That's right.
So, like, I figured Bono was already gone. I figured when they started their whatever 15 years ago, they killed their creator and also, started messing stuff up.
Because the Roymudes were like at least active in using the slowdown during Shinosuke's dad's tenure as a police officer, when Shinosuke was quite a lot younger. So,
which was 12 years ago.
Which was 12 years before. So the Roymudes were like, they were using the slowdown, just not as much. So when it happened during the global freeze, there must have been some people who knew what was going. Like the world didn't know because they kept having their memories altered by 001. But like, yeah. Hmm. So there must, see, this timeline makes, like, the more you think about it, the more it unravels. It's just like, oh,
although,
the worst kind of jumper.
The more we talk about it, the more that, like, okay, so Gaim is Crap Ryuki. This one is starting to feel more like a crap take on all of Inoue's writer stuff. Like, it's, like, okay, we've got the cops from Agito, we've got the no one telling anyone anything for reasons that don't entirely make sense from Fize.
Golden things from Kuga.
We've got ridiculous time periods and dad issues from Kiva.
Exactly.
People falling in water for no readily apparent reason. That happened in 33.
That's everything, in a way, right?
Very odd. Unless he just watched loads of Inoue stuff and was like, I can do this. La 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 la.
Which, that's, I mean, not, like, here's the thing.
That's not very nice.
No, I know.
But I can, I mean, it's coming from a place of frustration because it doesn't make sense. Anything that's going on here.
Look, say what you will about Inoue. Like, I always feel that there is a cohesion in background and plotting and world building and character building.
Mm. No, you're right. I agree.
That fits, even if the result on a plot level is not always as satisfying as I think it could be.
I think the problem sometimes with Inoue is that if the starting idea is good, the execution will work out. The problem with Fize often is it doesn't know what it wants to be, and I think that's the issue.
Yeah.
And like, Fize
becomes an infinitely more cohesive show if you take Kusaka out.
If you just take him out and he just stops
existing, all of the like communication conflicts cease to be. Except for What's-His-Face and the bird girlfriend. I don't know what's up with them. They have no excuse. They went to SeaWorld without knowing each other's first names. No excuse.
See, like, the thing is, that whole romance, like, there's part of me that kind of goes, oh, this is so stupid, this is all dramatic irony that they don't know each other, but like only in a Shakespearean play would this happen, and then we'd say it was art. But you know, like the whole kind of like, but then there's a part of me that kind of thinks it's actually kind of cute in a way. I don't know. On some levels for me it works, but like on other levels it's just ridiculous, as you say. I think that's the problem with Fize is that they try and like, it's both trying to be very gritty and then trying to be a kind of almost like a drama, like kind of this artistic thing, and it kind of doesn't. It kind of falls somewhere between the two, and doesn't really commit to either.
Keitaro and Yuka works completely for me, except on the level of it went on as long as it did, because they literally spend a day together without knowing each other's first names. I don't understand how their first names have never come up, given that she has brought him her laundry and has written her name on the sheet to get her laundry.
If she had, like, a weird chat handle and that was how they met, then I could kind of understand a little better, but in the emails,
they go by their first names, and in person they go by their last names, and that's where the mix-up is happening.
Is that how it happens?
That's what happens. But I don't understand how they spend all of this time together in person without their first names coming up.
The thing is, when you're watching Fires, you're not watching it for that. You're watching it for the bromance between Kiba and Fires.
I love Takumi and Horse Kengo, but...
I love the fact that so much of Fize is like monster fight. Let's go and like do some guy thing together, and that's like 5 minutes of the 25 minute episode is just spent with them like just doing guy things. Like,
I would rather be writing a show about just people becoming friends. It's just that he doesn't ever, he never ends up working with Takadera. Because Takadera would be like, you want to make a show about people being friends? Let's do this! But then they kicked him off of Hibiki and he just burned all those bridges and then burned a couple more.
Aww.
They got his bro, Odagiri Joe, to just burn some more bridges.
Joe will burn every bridge with Toei into infinity.
Yes, he'll build more bridges just to burn them.
Bless his heart. I love that man.
Yeah, you do.
Okay, so I have a question for y'all.
Okay.
What would you think about me reading from Kamen Rider Wiki? Would that be terrible?
Let me just cover myself in holy water first.
If it will clarify anything, even slightly.
But you have to promise that it's going to clarify something.
You can read anything as long as it's not their translations of names or episode titles. Then you can read anything you like.
Yeah, those are so interesting.
They're just wrong.
That's a very nice way to put it.
they're just not right.
Well, as much as we are into critical analysis, we also want to use words that heal, not words that kill.
That is true.
Constructive critical analysis.
Yeah, exactly. So
I'm sorry, Kamen Rider Wiki. I'm sure that they have very talented teams of translators trying to work this stuff out. I just sometimes wish they were better.
Okay, so I think that the information is from episode 10, which is something about like what's in the belt's past.
Okay.
Maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
Here we go. Let's hope this goes well. So this is from their plot synopsis. After the drive pit, he revealed to Shinosuke that Hart was his murderer during his final days as a human named Krim Steinbelt. Bringing Shinosuke to his mansion's ruin, he revealed his history. 15 years ago, as his friend Dr. Bono made 3 advanced androids called Romudes. Holy smokes, that sentence just his development hit a dead end and he pleaded for Krim's help and he gave him Krim gave Bono the prototype core drive years, but soon it made the first 3 Romudes rebel and kill Dr. Bono. So they killed Bono, then they came and killed Krim. When and why did, hold on, damn it, the Tokujo videos that come out with the DVDs seem to be implying that Bono uploaded his consciousness with the machine that scientist who got killed used.
Yes, I think that was what.
But that murder case was from like a few years ago, not 15 years ago.
Maybe he put himself into something else first. I mean,
some sort of interim
because Krim immediately tried to put himself into ZZZ. And it
apparently
didn't work.
Yes. Yeah,
so they apparently already had some means and then put himself in a belt. So it may be that they had something else that they could do that with. And then Bono tried to do that with the thing in the Type SCU specials to put him into something better.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Then why would he remain stuck in an iPad? You think he'd try?
Because it didn't work.
Yeah, well, maybe. Yeah, maybe.
He wasn't stuck in an iPad. That was just the only thing they could put him on. Because they, I guess you can't, you know, just Control C, Control V, and AI. Maybe there's like 3 Bonos. That would be interesting. Almost
5 Bonos. 800 Bonos.
Everyone's Bono forever.
Bono is the internet.
Didn't we just have that happen in another thing? Oh, he'll be like Ultron. Man. Ugh. Anyway.
But then it could be like Evangelion, where they have like the one part of the... Or whichever one you were talking about. Like,
everyone is right.
Bono split himself into like 5 parts. I don't know, that'd be cool. Or the idea that like Bono, that's just like a projection of him and his actual robot body is somewhere else and he's going to be the final villain. I mean, who knows?
I guess that would be okay.
We've established that he died 15 years ago. When Go was 4. So Go should yes. not have any real concrete memories of his father.
Well, that's why they're all hazy and they're just his dad with crazy hair laughing.
Well, no, but that's fine. I'm okay with that.
But, then he's been,
but
then
that
he's
puts
been,
weight
been
on the fact that Go
it?
Is doing this entirely for his own reputation.
Well, that fits with the character we know.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just needed that established.
Mm.
I wanted that established. I needed my timelines clear there.
Okay, well, sorry we took that long diversion. listeners, this is going to be like a 2-hour, 3-hour episode. We'll see.
We still have, like,
anyway.
We still have, like, I mean, 36 might throw thousands of spanners in the works. We don't know yet. So, like, that might be a
it
whole
could be
other
5 hours.
Hour of, like, just being like, well, it was going so well, and then they nosedived, and yeah, just, no. I'm hoping that doesn't happen. I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, someone's going to end up getting shot, or so it seems, but I don't know.
Well, yeah.
Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, and Shinosuke was really dead.
Yep.
Let's see.
Like,
so,
oh, right. Sorry. Yeah, I'm gonna bring this point up now because you mentioned that, right? You know, when the female forensic scientist is talking to him, she's like, "Oh, I cried so much when you died." Like,
yeah.
Everyone knows he was dead. Why are there not, like, thousands of medical doctors, like, swarming around him trying to work out why he's now alive?
Okay.
Because he has
a related question.
Sorry?
I was under the impression that Bono lived in him now.
Oh, yes.
Krim, you mean?
Not Bono.
Sorry, Krim, yeah.
No, it was just temporary.
No, that was just when they kind of do a double and double extreme thing, I think,
okay,
with Trideron.
So, okay, yeah. Okay, I was just really
but when
confused.
When he was out of
Rider
suit,
like,
he was like that, so.
Yeah, okay, it's just when he's in the type drive. Look, they're not really clear with a lot of this stuff.
No, no,
I thought
not.
It was. I thought it was going to be a thing where he was always going to have the weird robot dude inside him, and that would have been cool in a freaky body horror.
Yeah, no, that would have been interesting, but no, because he was still speaking through the shift cards in that scene. So yeah,
like,
kind of backwards
weird.
Going.
I think he's back in the belt at this point.
Jonathan, I was being very presumptuous, and I was talking about Yami and Yugi, and Aleph was like, "What? What are you talking about?
Oh, no,
what's
I heard,
a this?"
I heard that bit in the episode, and I was like, I was remembering all these things, and I was like, "Oh yeah, the cool, oh, the mind shuffle strategy, and all that's awesome, awesomeness."
Because I know we've had short little conversations about the show in the past.
Oh
but,
yeah, no, totally. Yeah,
apparently
yeah.
Aleph and I not so much.
I heard that bit of the episode. I was like this, but I was trying to like work out what you guys thought of Drive, so I didn't come in and be like, "Oh, it's so terrible." And you're like, "No, we really like it." That'd be really awkward.
if you did come in and say, "Oh, it's so terrible," and we all liked it, that would be an interesting discussion. Because
oh no, no,
I
honestly thought I was going to. I honestly thought I was going to come on tonight and be the only one who was enjoying the show, like, from some of the things that had been intimated, but obviously, you know, like, I'm kind of in two minds, so it's sort of an interesting one. It's an interesting one
yeah.
so far.
That's a really
it's weird,
because,
like,
thing
a lot
point.
Of good things are happening, but, right?
Yeah.
But it's been a hard time
getting here, so the sense of trust is gone.
This is true.
That's... I don't know, no, you're right. No, there are many things they should have done and haven't, and... Yeah, they're just leaving characters behind. I think that's the worst part of it. They've given, you know, they've got so much there and just kind of aren't doing anything with it.
Yeah, and unfortunately that's something you'll see in Forza as well. But
yeah.
I don't know. I think I was a little more forgiving on my second watch, but still it is disappointing.
Well,
Wizard's
the same to be fair. Like that's yeah. like it's almost like I think this is a like I don't is this a post-decade thing? Like the Central Rider becomes like the sole focus as it comes later on, because it seems that way in Wizard.
I would say from Forza on.
Okay.
Double and O's did a pretty decent job with their core cast. I guess O's with the slight exception of Hina. But I still felt they did plenty with Hina.
At least she got some good focus episodes even near
yeah,
the
like,
end.
Yeah, like, Hina still actually did a lot and had a lot of impact on other people.
Yeah.
So I'll give Double and O's handled their core casts pretty well.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I think a lot of it is just that their core casts seem to be just expanding every year, just getting bigger and bigger, and those are going to be really hard to handle when you've got a title character, and that title character pretty much has to be the one to solve the problem. Otherwise, why are they the title character?
Yeah, but see, I don't know, because Ryuki kind of works, and, like, they're not... I don't know. Yeah, like
Ryuki does it, but then Ryuki is just like eight giant middle fingers up at just at the whole idea of Kamen Rider, which is kind of why I love it.
Is Ryuki takes so little time to actually do Kamen Rider stuff.
That's true, actually, yeah.
It's literally four minutes at the end of every episode is when you get these in-suit fights, and the rest of the show is just, we're going to handle character conflict.
Mm. Yep.
That sounds like the best show ever.
I'm really sad that Subvent slowed down with his subbing of it, because I was keeping up. I'm 15 episodes in. I really need to, like, then I got in Route 2 into Wizard, so I need to, like, finish that off first. But no, Ryuki is cool. They do really, as you say, like, there's not much Kamen riding in it, but I think what's there is good, actually. They really make use of what they have when they have it, I would argue.
Oh, yeah, no, when they do, they make it count, but they take so much time for other things, which is weird for a rider show. And, like, it...
Well, I don't know, because, like, coming off the back of... Because, I don't know, like, because Kuga... Because I kind of see, like, Kuga, Agato, Ryuki is kind of a... They're kind of three parts of something, but then, like,
well, basically just, like, I always read them as just a giant conversation. Kuga is the reconstruction of the rider, Agito as, yes, and everyone can be Kamen Rider, and Ryuki is, yes, everyone
why not,
can be Kamen Rider.
Everyone.
But then Fire's kind of just isn't really anything. But those three kind of parts of it are kind of a very interesting progression of the idea. And so... Which is cool. I enjoy Ryuki a lot when I watch it. As you said, because you have time to really get into the cast, it really gives you care a lot about them when they're Kamen Riding. Because I think that's one of the problems I sometimes have with a lot of the Neo Heisei stuff. Is you get into some fights and you're kind of like, I'm really not that interested in who wins this fight. Like, I don't know, some of them. Like, I haven't been finding that in Wizard, because I really warmed to Nito as, like, when he first appeared, I was like, oh, come so on, cool. Like, really? This is not good. And then, like, I don't know, as it went on, I kind of actually really kind of warmed up to him a lot, which is cool.
He's quite endearing. He has that animal magnetism.
I think the thing with Ryuki...
He should have had his own show.
Well, yes. But I think a thing with Ryuki
it would have been him and Mayonnaise as a co-star.
There's a very constant threat of, with the way Ryuki is, one person is going to make it out alive. So, how long are these other people still going to be here? So
it's
with every fight, it's someone can very, very well die. Because they have to, by the nature of this show. But they give you enough time to get attached to everyone where you're like, but I don't want Kitaoka to die.
Even though he's terrible.
Well,
I don't want Asakura to die. Yeah, you do.
Like, I don't want
Shinji to die. I don't want Ron to die.
Ron!
But yes, we're getting way off track.
I wanted Tiger to die. I did want that. I very much enjoyed when he died. I hated him. He was terrible. He was worse than Asakura.
Okay, so moving on to question three. Of four, when will we finish? Who knows?
Never!
I mean, of six or seven, whatever.
We're here forever.
We aren't doing this episode in two parts. Most definitely we are not. Anyway. did you enjoy seeing the dynamics change in the heart-brain-medic relationship?
I kind of forgot that relationship was a thing. I don't know how it happened, because it never stopped being a thing, but way more interesting stuff has been going on, and now suddenly we're back to Robot Love Triangle, and I really can't be bothered. I love Brain. I do. I've always been pretty fascinated by where Brain was going to go, because the whole logic member of the team being so petty and, like, emotion-driven is really rare, and I thought that was really interesting. And Brain finally, like, reaching ultimate evolution, and his first step is to go rub it in Medic's face, I thought was great, because that's exactly who he is. He's that guy. But I mean, how has the dynamic changed? Hart is still approaching everything exactly the same way. Medic and Brain's goals haven't changed. The only difference now is that Brain is winning and Medic is losing.
Well, I will say, like, I think it's cool that Brain has picked up on some of Nira's traits, or at least, like, the laugh. That was neat.
Oh, yeah.
But, I'm kind of with you there, though, Sono, because, like, all of the, you know, it's just a slight change in the overall dynamic between Brain and Medic, and there's no stakes for that, because I don't know what Medic wants, besides, you know, Hart.
I forgot she, well, not forgot she was in it, but, like, she turned up in, like, in episode 34, and I was like, oh, man, she's in this show. Like, you,
yeah,
like, she's had, like, no...
just left her in the dust for the last while.
Yep. Because, like, she hasn't fought in monster form for the last five, maybe more than that, episodes.
Thankfully.
Her monster form has not been seen, like hardly at all. And, like, if you see her, she's just, like, wandering around saying things. It's not, there's no, as you say, there's no sense of agency. She doesn't exist to do anything. She just exists to exist, which is bizarre, to say the least. But, I mean, like, it, like, the only thing I will say about, like, Brain is that, like, the whole, like, comedy leap onto the floor thing when Medic was, like, I love that scene, but I would have preferred it if he just, like, remained standing a bit more subtle. Because, like, I don't know, but then I don't know, like over-the-top villains kind of don't do it for me.
Brain has never really been subtle. Brain has always been very, very exaggerated.
Except when he's trying to fool when he's pretending he's human,
which he does well. But I think maybe I can help you bring the problem with the jump into focus. It was because it was on wires, right? Did that bother you that it was on wires?
It just looked so unnatural. I think that was like I wouldn't have minded if he'd been closer to her. I think it just looked so exaggerated. I think that was the problem. It didn't seem natural in any sense. I think the editing was bad as well. Like, it was good to hide the contraption that was doing it, obviously. It just felt really... But then, to be fair, like, there were a lot of bits in this in 35 particularly where they put in, like, comic book effects that just didn't really seem to add anything, like, at all. And I didn't really... And so I think it was just kind of... It was just another, like, symptom of that rather than anything else. It wasn't that in particular.
You mean you didn't like Nira's Tony Starking it up? At the press conference?
Like, no.
Okay.
The press conference was chilling, because it was, and the whole, like, and then at the end with the whole, like, oh, actually, like, oh, they've set the whole thing up, like, it was chilling, and it was quite threatening, but that just kind of, like, detracted quite a lot from the kind of the chilling aspect, because the thing is, it's, like, Ota says in the kind of, in the opening couple of minutes, it's like, you know, he may be, you know, he's like, he's the head of the First Division. This is not an idiot that you're dealing with. You know, you're dealing with somebody who knows the police. He has lots of friends in the police. He is a very good police officer to get to that level. So you're not dealing with somebody you can easily outwit here. This is, you know, this is a whole level above. But then they just keep doing that to kind of just descend him to this level of kind of pantomime buffoonery. And you're kind of like, well, that's very disingenuous to him as a character, because you're trying to build up this credible threat. So I don't know, it kind of seems like they're, I really want them to kind of to make him really, really cold and really shrewd, but they just kind of seem to keep wanting to make him into this pantomime villain. And I don't think either serves the purpose very well. I don't think doing it that way does anyway.
It really
does. I kind of like him being a schmuck, actually. Like, I'm enjoying the fact that he's being so openly bad, and he's getting to enjoy it. I kind of like how he's, like, rubbing it in his face, because he's like. I mean, I know they said this in the first episode where he appeared, but, like, he's an abusive authority figure and a bully, and, like, that's what he is, and he's having a really good time doing it, especially now that he has been able to drop so much pretense.
But it doesn't look like he's having a good time. It just looks like he's putting it on. That's what I mean. It doesn't seem it's like he's like, "Oh, I've been told I have to enjoy this, therefore I'm going to act in this." It doesn't actually seem like he is enjoying it. I think that's probably what comes across to me anyway.
I mean, it does feel very acted. But compare it to the period of time in which we were supposed to think he was a good guy, when he didn't, when he wasn't really that exaggerated, and he did seem more kind of like a competent authority figure. Like, yeah, he still got some jokes, but it definitely wasn't to this level, where this is very much...
Like,
the personality of Nira as a person.
Like it was a genuine surprise. Like when it was revealed that he was the Roimu, it was a genuine surprise. I was like, that is quite a route to go down, because I honestly thought he was on their side. So, you know, I liked that, but because the way I read his character in the initial case was that I thought it was like all this like kind of buffoonery and this bullying thing is kind of, it's all directed at the SCU and it's kind of all coming down from above, and actually this isn't he's doing this because he's jealous of Shinosuke, but it's because he's being told that he needs to hate him for various reasons, and it's all, you know, kind of artificial. So when he snaps out of it, actually he's not this gregarious, and he's, you know, that kind of thing. It's all kind of an act, and so you'll actually see him to kind of become more of himself. And so when he is a villain, actually it will come from a place of kind of, you know, of actual villainhood. But then I guess he's really petty in reality, because that's what you see when he murders Tamari's father, is kind of, you know, this kind of, because he murders him for the absolute, like, it's like the worst of reasons, like in many respects. I had to watch that scene about 5 times before I believed it. I was like, there's got to be something I'm missing here. This can't just be because, you know, I'm jealous of him or something. You know, it's a kind of, so I guess it kind of does bear itself out in character. I don't know. I just wish he wasn't so over the top, because that's what I feel a lot of the time with it. It just seems over the top.
I think actually you've kind of got me the brainwave I needed to understand how to explain why I never quite clicked with the guy as a villain. Because, like, I think they want him to be the Joker.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
But he comes off, like, alright, any of you guys ever read Atlas Shrugged or The Fountainhead?
No.
Good, don't. Terrible. Ayn Rand is, she's not good. And her villains are always this guy. They're sneaking, sniveling, and they're always like, there's a man who is greater than me. I will destroy him because I destroy greatness, because I hate greatness for reasons. Because it is my nature to hate goodness and rightness and things that are good. And I think that's the level, like, he's coming off more as someone who is bad because he's bad because he's bad. And the nature of his badness is weakness, and we must destroy weakness. As opposed to, I don't know, like, yes, he was a better cop than me, he got the promotion I wanted, and it became an obsession, and this is the one guy I've always hated. Which would be a lot more interesting to me.
Yeah, and also it's kind of odd that he kind of projects... Like, I wouldn't, like, and also, because the one thing about the Joker is that it's kind of like, he hates Batman, or like, he loves Batman, I don't know, like, there's a kind of weirdness going on there, but like, all of his focus is directed at him, and everyone else is just collateral damage, whereas with Nero, it seems to be like, he's like, oh, I hate Shinosuke and the Kamen Rider, and then he kind of like, he's like, oh, no, I hate all of SCU as well, like, he's not just trying to get Shinosuke, he puts all of SCU in prison as well. For like, you know, and it's not just, well, and it's not just because they're
SCU damage, is
you know,
an extension of Shinosuke. Yeah. Shinosuke yeah, needs I can them see, to yeah. operate.
Yeah, I can see it that way. Nira
does know about the drive pit. He knows everyone's role in relation to Shinosuke.
And it is quite sadistic the way he goes about it, I guess. So yeah, no, fair enough. Maybe that is a bit of a null point. But yeah, I don't know. It seemed less directed in the show towards Shinosuke, but maybe, I don't know. Maybe it's just the way it came off. I don't know.
Well, I think we've solved the riddle. He is the Joker.
You're mixing villains. I don't like it.
Oh, whoops. Sorry. All right. I'll stop that. I retract that statement. I'll leave it in, but I'll retract it. Okay, question 4.
I don't apologize for saying it, but I...
question 4. Is it a contrivance that Shinosuke apparently chose to untransform, or dehension, as you like, while chasing Nira, who granted had no more ability to transform as far as Shinosuke knew, in order to arrest him? Should he have been dehensioned by Brain's attack instead, if they wanted him to go in there vulnerable at gunpoint?
I really don't know. Related, though, I'm really confused as to why Shinosuke using type technic in the formula truck gun, whatever it is, changed his form from Trideron to technic. Why did that happen?
Yeah, that didn't make any... That,
I mean, I realized that it's because they needed the car for the next scene, because they use the car almost immediately after that. And he can't have the car if he is the car. But the form change itself, the happening of it, didn't make a whole lot of sense. I'm also bothered that he can use the formula gun in Type Tridoron, but I guess that the gun is a shift car itself, so it feels slightly more acceptable than AG using the Putotira axe form when he's not in the Putotira form. But it's a thing that really bothered me in O's, but it bothers me really in any rider when they're using weapons that are assigned to a form that they are not in.
In the case of Tridoron, I'm tempted to give it a pass also, because I know in Kuga, at least the back matter said, and some of the old toys said, that some of his later forms, his ultimate form and the amazing mighty form, could use all of the weapons from the previous forms. So I guess that's just a little, you know, we'll allow it, even if it's kind of...
But we never
athematic.
See him do that.
No, we don't, but it's in the back matter. I'm tempted to allow it.
They do say... Don't they say that... Oh, I'm trying to remember now, because it's a bit of a while since I saw 34. Don't they say when they bring him back that shift car that Rena made is the only one that can completely fill the formula gun just on its own? Or have I made that up?
No, it
I'm
can.
Sure, I'm sure...
The,
I'm, no,
the
I'm,
Tridoron
I'm
shift
sure.
car can completely fill the gun on its own.
Yeah. I'm sure there was a... Like, in my mind, it's all kind of, like... Because it's... there's something in my mind. Because it's not magical, I kind of think that they're more interchangeable. I don't know. Like, because, like with Wizard, if he was in the fire form and started using water, that would make no sense. But, like, because it's all kind of mechanical, like... I kind of get the impression you can sort of chop and change, because if you were an engineer, you'd make it all work together. It's why you can still use the drives. I know what you mean about, like, why you don't like it from an aesthetic point of view, but, like, to me it kind of makes sense because it's all been designed by somebody rather than it being magical.
Yeah, I mean, I can let it slide here because the gun is its own shift car and therefore has its own AI and is not specifically attached to formula. It just bothers me. And I know with Putotira he can use it in other forms because he still has the purple metals in him. I still hate it.
No,
I still think
that's
bad.
That's a very legitimate view to have. I mean, I don't know, like, to be fair, it kind of bothered me that that when he got Tridoron, that the weapons, like the steering sword and the door gun, didn't get, like, kind of upgraded slightly as well. Like, I would have liked...
Or he had to, like, pull them out of his arm.
Yeah, or... Well,
that would have been awesome.
That would have been cool. Like, just... I need a sword. Vroom. Oh, yes. Like, you know, like, that would have been cool. But I just wish that... Even if they just had, like, I don't know, like, the handle, the grip had got bigger, or, like, I don't know, or the formula gun, like, had something... Not the formula gun. The door gun or something, like, bolted on the front of it. I don't know. But, like, the idea you... Or, like, he pulled parts off his body and added them to the weapons or something. I don't know. Like, that would be cool. But just because the weapons still seem to have maintained, like, a consistent power level, but he can use them in a form that's far more powerful than the weapons themselves. Like, you kind of think, like, the steering sword would break because he'd be hitting it so much harder or something. So you think it would, like, it would have to level up in comparison to his relative strength. But maybe that's just me thinking too much into it. I don't know. Like, that's my kind of... That's how I think about forms quite a lot of the time, is, like, your tool set should match the level of strength that you currently attain, which is why when you're a rider you don't get the more powerful weapons till later on, because you'd blow a hole in your chest if you fired the, like, final gun when you had, like, the base form or something.
So in other words, this one is the suit that they should be asking Kiriko to put on.
Yes.
Yeah,
the only one that can handle her.
Yeah, yeah, this one might be able to take it.
Yep. Brilliant.
But maybe, no promises.
But I do want to say, like, going back to the question about, you know, why is he de-transforming, I do want to say, like, yes, it is a total contrivance, but I have to give them this, like, it does play into what the conflict is supposed to be, because, like, the conflict is Shinosuke v. Neera, not Kamen Rider, versus, is it the Thief Roimu? That's what this one is?
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's a person-to-person fight. Not to mention, like, look, no matter how awful Nira is, I would not be comfortable if my Kamen Rider is attacking a dude who's just a dude as a Kamen Rider. Like, that's not even bringing...
Yeah, Rider kicking a person is quite different to Rider kicking an actual monster. Like,
yeah, you know, it's not bringing a gun to a knife fight. It's bringing an army to, a toddler fight.
Yeah, it is...
Which way to the baby war?
Exactly.
Oh, that would be so bizarre. But it is kind of like a central, like, conceit of Kamen Rider. Like, you don't, like, the Riders don't go out and, like, punch actual people. Like, you know, because... But I think, like, in some senses I would have liked it more if Shinosuke had, like, walked in, henshined, and then, like, de-transformed before he saw Nira had the gun, because he knew that, I'd like it to be, in a sense, his choice, because he was like, I know that though I have the upper hand, this would be disproportionate, and I'm a good police officer, therefore I'm not going to use disproportionate force, because I know that's not right. Which would have been, like, because Nira's kind of personifying, like, everything that's, like, wrong with the police force, because he's basically just on the wrong side of the law for the worst of reasons. It's not even like he's noble, he's just a thief, basically. And yet he's managed to attain the highest level. So actually, for Shinosuke to be like, I'm going to be the better person, would have been really interesting. And then to turn around and be... And then if Nira turns around and he's like, oh, I knew you were so predictable, kind of thing. Like, it would have been an interesting dynamic to play off. I just kind of... But I think it was very much a convenience, but I would have liked it if they'd had the foresight to turn the convenience into something they could have made a point out of, rather than it just being like, we want the kind of, you know... Because the other thing is, of course, it's much harder to emote with a suit on in ways that aren't, like, kind of over the top as it would be, with, you know, like, as it would be in that situation. So it's interesting that... As I say, I think it is a contrivance, but I wish it was one they made more of and, like, kind of tried to utilize.
Though, actually, you do bring up a good point, which is probably one of the other, you know, non-logistical reasons why they didn't do it, because that would have involved making a moral stand and making a moral point about the proper use of power. And
this one and Gaim
have not been about, like, having statements inside about proper use of power when you've got it.
Yeah, they haven't really...
On the point of emoting in suits, they've got a really skilled suit actor playing Drive. They could
definitely. I'm not trying to feed on the suit actors. I'm just, you know, they do an amazing job.
And I'm thinking back to the Excel Shroud fight, because I'm me. That entire fight is between it's a very emotional fight between two people in masks, in which one isn't even really fighting. Shroud is mostly just standing there firing a gun, waiting for Terui to kill her.
Mm.
And that scene is between two people who have no facial expressions. And even when you bring in Wakana, she comes in as Claydol. I'm not willing to let them use that as an excuse.
Oh, no. I mean, I quite agree. Because I know that there were a lot of... Because one of my biggest complaints about the new Spider-Man movies was that he took his mask off too much. And I know that from behind-the-scenes stuff, apparently that was because obviously it's more difficult to emote through masks, is what they said. But I was like, voice acting is a thing. But yeah, I agree. They shouldn't use it as an excuse. But I do wonder if, like, that was what was in their minds at the time. Like, but yeah. Just maybe, I don't know. I'm just kind of saying what I've heard before. And but yeah, I agree. Like, they've been. I mean, even in Sentai, there's so many scenes where they're wearing, like, you know, they are wearing full on suits, but they can still manage to project all the emotion that they need, and more so in many cases. So I agree. It's not that practical, but I think I'd like to think it was for more high minded reasons than. But like, I kind of think it was for the spectacle of they wanted. Although I kind of don't know if I'm happy with my Kamen Rider pointing a gun at at somebody else. I don't know. When they're all de-henshined, I don't know. It's a very different image. But he is a police officer, so...
To be fair, someone else pointed a gun at him first. It's a defensive gun
true.
Point.
It's very another true. Guy with a gun.
Yeah, it's not Otto just pulling a gun on someone in prison. That was weird.
That's still really iffy.
But yeah, it's not quite... It's not quite the same, and I do agree with you, but this interesting kind of conceit of, like, you know, we can't have the Kamen Rider punching real people. Like, it, like, that's
wait,
a very... no, in the sense of, like, you can't, like, very rarely do you see a Kamen Rider punching an actual person. Like, or, like, Rider kicking them. Like, that just wouldn't happen.
Oh, of course not. They'd be dead.
Exactly. Well, precisely, that's my point. Like, you know, that's... But I like to think that they're making a point about how you about violence is not the answer to your normal everyday problems, and they're taking these problems into a new level by making them into monsters. But actually, the real way to fix it is not to use your Rider powers. Like, I like to think that's the point they're making. But sometimes I know that they're just going for spectacle and practicality rather than like trying to be high minded, because that's just not what happens sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, may I take a swing at
please do.
Question
swing
four?
Away.
Okay. So yeah, I do think it's a huge contrivance, and for the most part, it really bothers me that he had to be untransformed to get the gun pulled on him or whatever. And I think, why not just go with the simple thing? I almost said elegant, but sorry. Just too much Ben in my head. They should have just had like brain, like maybe him take the brunt of the attack and get untransformed, and then have Chase jump in there and protect him, and then take brain on after that. But anyway, so it's too bad they did that, and I think it was a bad move.
Yeah, Would Type Trideron
fit in that hallway? Would he be able to maneuver through that hallway in suit?
I don't think Type Trideron's that big.
No, Tennic is
wider, I think.
It's still a very narrow hallway that he seems to have a hard time maneuvering in out of suit. So, I mean, maybe he's just like, I wouldn't be able to keep up with him in suit running down this hallway.
I guess it's possible.
Yeah. Mm.
He knows that hallway. It's the hallway to his office.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
No, I was just saying that I wished it had been his choice to untransform when Nero was just in the room, because he knew that that was the more moral thing to do, because he thinks he's unarmed, but like, I don't know. But then we said that would mean the show would then be taking a stand on moral issues, and you know, it's not really up for doing that.
That's just not a thing that Kamen Rider should be doing.
See, now that's I'm sure. I'm sure Ishinomori would roll in his grave at those words.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't want to interrupt the power fantasy, you know?
Yeah.
You can't do that, because, you know, it's about not having ethics in Kamen Rider or pushing an agenda, because Kamen Rider shouldn't push an agenda. Right? That's how this works, right?
That's totally how this works. You've completely understood Rider 1 in every one of its nuances.
Yep. Because, I mean, it's just about people fighting. That's the only thing that matters, right?
Yep. Oh, clearly.
Ishinomori was a huge fan of violence, don't you know that?
No.
Yeah, he loved it. You know, like he'd wake up every day and think, violence, this is totally the thing that I need to be doing.
That dude drew some amazing fight scenes.
No, that's true.
he's critical of the use of violence, but, yo, no one... Like, this is the problem at the core of Kamen Rider, and one of the things that I think keeps Kamen Rider so young and vital after all these years is just included in Kamen Rider is always this thing. It's like, it's terrible that the only thing I can do is kick monsters. I want to make a better society, but all my tools are for kicking monsters. Thank goodness these monsters need kicking.
I kind of love that idea though, that at the core of it is like, I've been given these, like, I've been dealt this rubbish hand, and it's another word then, and I'm gonna take that and like mold it into something else, because that's the, like, I love that kind of contradiction being at the heart of the show, in the sense, like, you know, because it's almost biblical. It's like, you know, beat swords into plowshares and that kind of thing. Like, that as a concept for your hero, I really, really like. So, you know, I can kind of, yeah, I know you're trying to be funny, but like, I kind of really like that as an idea. Sorry.
So, Jonathan, you should definitely check out the Shin Kamen Rider Spirits.
Manga
of, like, it's a redo of the original series, and it puts Ichimonji in there earlier and ties him in more to the plot and everything, And there's a really cool panel where, Rider One is just standing there after having, like, destroyed some Kaijin.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's sad. And I think he's crying under the helmet and he's like, why do I have to destroy these, would-be brothers of mine with these hands, these terrible hands? And it's just like, it's beautiful. That's I teared up reading it the first time.
So send me the links to scans or whatever, or, you know, or legitimate ways to purchase such things.
You can find them easily on comradeguide.weebly.com.
Oh, cool. Okay. I know some of the Kamen Rider stuff's on Comixology. Are they there, or are we?
It's just the original Rider One manga.
Okay, cool. Fair enough.
Which you should purchase anyway.
So question five, what do you think may come from this new alliance with Albano?
Okay, was Bano always this sentient? Could he always, like, make the tablet float around and kind of do whatever it is that he wants to do? Because if so, he's been passively aiding the enemy this whole time without any kind of protest. And I think that's a thing about him that we should probably keep in mind going forward. And if he couldn't do all of these things before, why can he suddenly do them now? All out of nowhere, just when they need him to. Magical Tablet Dad is raising a lot more questions than he's answering. I mean, I'm also really curious about, you know, him being like, okay, I'm willing to work with Shinosuke. Specifically with him being like, I'm willing to do it. Not like, I'm glad to be back with you guys doing the good things. Like, no, it's like, okay, well, I'll help this guy since he seems to be winning. And also that he... He implies, like, oh, well, Krim probably thinks badly of me, so I don't know how well this idea of helping you guys... Yeah, but the thing is, Krim is just as guilty as Bano is.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, Krim isn't in any position to throw stones.
Well, I don't know. I mean, like, he said, like, oh, I gave him the core drive here, but, like, I don't know, I'm not of the impression that Krim was under the impression, that he was actually going to, you know, enable the destruction of the world, but then I guess, and he has tried to do something about it, to try and make up for it, so, yeah, I don't know, he could be in a worse position.
Yeah, but Krim has also lied about all of it repeatedly for the past 9 months. So, I mean, I don't know how much Krim didn't know about what Bano was doing.
Yeah, that's true, right?
Sort of the thing. Whenever I had my, like, no, Krim is the real villain things, it's like, he's angry robot god, and they've rebelled against him, and so he will destroy them because he's petty. Like, that's all in there. It just requires a very uncharitable interpretation, which has kind of become my thing.
I said you're pretty expert.
I was gonna say A-list the uncharitable.
I'm not trying to be that guy, but like I'm trying to find the meat in the show, and there's just not been a lot of the meat that I want.
No,
there's a lot of vegetables.
No, it is true.
A lot of tomatoes, some bits, but I'm like, no, but I'm here for some sirloin.
So maybe I kind of feel like haggis, to be honest.
Now I'm hungry.
But, you know, I wish I could. I need to have haggis sometime. I have no basis for comparison.
It is. It's not like anything you'll have. It's. I quite like it, but you know, I mean, I like crazy things, so who knows? But like I can say, the one thing I would say, Sono, is that about like, you know, when could Bano always do this stuff? Was like the only thing that I haven't really had made clear is whether he's been in the tablet all the time. Or like he just kind of.
Where else would he have been?
Because Brain always had the tablet, but whether Bano was always in it, we don't know. I mean, like, because if he's in the Roimude network, whatever that means, then he could. The fact that he's in the tablet now kind of doesn't mean anything. But then I guess like why would they be so intent on getting the tablet back rather than getting like surely it's still connected to the network if he's in it or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of. Like, I don't understand. If he wasn't in the tablet before, if he was just somewhere in the network, just why wouldn't he have been messing with them the whole time?
Exactly,
because we've seen them pulling Roimudes in and out of the network. So yeah. if he's been in the network, it's essentially the same as having been in the tablet.
So yeah.
There's not a difference there.
I think we can just assume that when they downloaded him onto the tablet, they hit the Wi-Fi off button, and he just has not been able to work around that.
So, well, then how did Go turn it on? Like, there's no answers to what is going on with him.
Well, because they're not focusing on Go at all for reasons that will best remain clear to nobody. I mean, like, they just, like they're giving
him terrible, time. So.
Well, no, I agree, and I can't say that I'm complaining, but, like, I don't think, it's like, you know, they're kind of expecting us to take a lot of this on trust, which in a show where, like, again, you know, the main guy in the belt has been lying a lot, or at least has been trying to make where his own
literally everyone has been lying.
Exactly.
No one in the show is free of sin.
Except Q.
Q lied about having Q too.
Oh, that's true.
You lied about having
that was cute though. So I give him a pass.
It was adorable.
That was cute.
But
no.
He did lie. OJ,
Your Honor,
the only
Your Honor,
one.
In all fairness,
sin.
That was hella cute. Objection overruled.
My friend sent me around this gif that was like these two lawyers and. And it's like, but Your Honor, is it possible that, hey, wait a minute, but you're just playing devil's advocate. What? And he's like, he looks to the other lawyer and he's like, literally, Satan is stood next to you. And he turns around and he's standing next to Satan. He's like, no, he's under this sheet, and throws a sheet over him. He's just like, what on earth is this craziness going on? I give Q a pass. But no, I agree with you. Like, it's kind of strange the show's kind of going, oh, well, you should just take this on trust because everyone else has been proved to not be completely truthful about things before. So why should we trust someone that, as you say, probably seems to have been at least not trying to stop the enemy? Because he presumably knows they're bad, or is he just attracted to the most powerful group that happens to be around at the time?
Look, wait, there is no group more powerful. He's a wizard. Did you see what he did? He is a tablet. From inside the tablet, he deconstructed a human being.
Mm.
Took her into himself and reconstructed her 3 feet away. And for some reason, Go is not, like, crapping himself because that is the most amazing thing anyone has ever seen.
Well, I mean, you know Sanjo and Data children.
Mm.
Yeah, this
I didn't. You know,
you know, drop a child into the internet and then pick them back out and just run with it. And no one thinks this is weird. No one's like, oh my god, maybe we should call a doctor or I don't know, figure out what's going on.
That is the scariest thing that has ever happened.
I did. There was a point at which I thought like he'd like. They kind of given up and just made like a Data duplicate, so it looked like she was alive. I was like, nah, this show's not that. They're not that brave. Like that was.
Look, I mean, you know, it's
the. Well, I mean, he did it in Double, but then again, in Double, it was the whole plot.
Yeah.
So, but like even here, this is kind of scarier than Double because Bonno can apparently just do this at will.
Yeah. Yeah.
Raichu had to fall in the well.
By the way, point of order. Is this what Digimon is?
No.
Is he one of those weird little digital computer? Look, all I remember from, like, the three episodes I've seen is, like, the kids hold the thing, and then there's, like, a light around them, and then they fall into, like, the computer world.
Yeah, but it's not. Yeah, but it's not.
I'm trying to restrain myself so I don't, like, give a really long, nerdy explanation.
Okay.
But it's a parallel world.
Okay, so we're just going to say. This is just what we will say. Amit refrains from reaching through the internet to slap Aelif. Gotcha.
Aelif, it's Narnia. That's basically all you need to know. That's what it is.
Okay.
It is internet.
It's internet Narnia. Narnia.
Yeah. That's a good way to do it.
So, point of order, point two. Can the girl be the next Kamen Rider after Ghost? Because she is empowered by internet Narnia.
Why not?
Thank you. That's
sure.
All I need.
I mean... We let a 10-year-old and a high school girl be Kamen Riders last year. 2 years ago.
Of Narnia. A weird thing has been occurring to me just in this last episode, and maybe it's just because I have very certain things that I really focus on as well, come
no
you
way.
All of you. Really specific aesthetic choices? What? Nah. The whole dad as god thing that is sort of, you know, with Shinosuke's dad is sort of this, you know, super good Christ Redeemer figure, and then we get Go's dad, well, Go and Kiriko's dad, as...
Is he Kiriko's dad? We don't know that.
Yeah, we don't really, yeah, like, their relationship is, we don't know, it's as yet unspecified.
Go's dad, anyway. Ghost dad! Ha!
Well, that's bringing us back to Skull and Double.
Yeah, there you
go. If you're hitting Ghost Dad.
Yeah, well, again, like, this does feel like it's sort of building on Double, because one of the things that makes Double work is that there's these big, strong patriarch figures that all of the main cast kind of have to play off against, and I wonder if it's not like at episode 25, they're like, how do we make this work? Add some ads.
I mean, to be fair, that's how I make things work, so...
Hey, you know, I mean, if it works for folks, it works, but...
Well, we've had, to be fair, like, an awful lot, like, I mean, just thinking, like, Forze, Wizard, Gaim, like, all of those Kamen Riders haven't had dads around. They've all had, like, parental, maternal figures, but no fathers. I mean, Gintaro had his, like, his granddad or his uncle? Granddad.
But then there's... All of these, you also do have... strong effects by dads.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. And I guess really Kengo's.
Those is a little more tenuous, but I mean, you can blame Eiji's dad for Eiji being the way he is and the things that led to Eiji as we come upon him. But I mean, you have Philip's dad, you have Kengo's dad, you have Koyomi's dad. I know there's some dad stuff in Gaim that I don't, whatever.
And to be fair, Gintaro's dad does sort of appear when he's dead. In this brief
weird flashback that I think is kind of weird and implies more than actually happens.
I don't know. I like the idea that it's his parents who further empower him to get cosmic states. But I mean, I haven't.
Well, or are trying to call him to heaven to his final reward because. Gintaro is the Redeemer, at least in that show.
Yeah, yeah.
And only in that show, I'm not being as casually blasphemous.
As usual.
I'm saying.
Yeah, quite.
I will. I'll be that guy.
Oh, dear. So I think I've got any points to make on this that aren't, like, I don't know. Yeah, like I still thought it was strange. It definitely wasn't the way I expected him to fix the problem. But I guess like but it was weird because it was implied it was an actual like poison that would affect you rather than like something you can do with data. Whereas like he just like rebuilt her out of data, which is again strange as we've all said.
He basically just like made her into data, which makes the poison into data, and he just
and therefore
deleted
you can fix
that.
Yeah, like yeah, no, I get that, but like. To transmogrify flesh into, like, you're just, yeah, that's just, like,
yeah,
that's incredibly,
it's
like...
horrible!
Jonathan, Digimon are alive.
Look, I'm not
yeah,
saying
they
she's
are,
not alive.
But, like yeah, they are, but, like, he as a tablet did what it requires a whole other parallel world to do in Digimon. Like, you know, they make...
I'm just saying, maybe he threw her, maybe they biomerged, and that was it,
you know?
Well, that's unsettling, because she's in high school.
It's not weird.
11-year-olds.
It's not weird. When it happens, it's really cool. Like they because especially when they share their voices. I don't know. It works better in the Japanese original than in the dub.
You mean it's cool when all those 11-year-old kids get naked inside?
You're ruining a beautiful thing. This is, I'm not happy. I'm registering a complaint.
Again, Uncommon RX, ruining beautiful things. New tag. That's
what I do.
That's also very good.
That's going on my business cards.
You have business cards?
I have business cards.
I should have some cards. Anyway, moving back. I think this might have been an interesting route to go down if Go were a more developed character, but we know that's seemingly not what the show wants us to do, and thankfully I'm glad of that, because, like, the less we have to spend with him, the better, really. it's just it like his whole character just kind of gone over the cliff, and they're not gonna bring him back, not with only 10 episodes to go. I can't see what on earth they could do to redeem it. I just don't think it's gonna happen. And like, it might have been, and like we were saying, this whole kind of like the whole kind of like father figure thing, it would have been an interesting parallel, because Shinosuke's had his father taken from him and Go's now kind of got it back. It would have been interesting to see how that played off if they were actually friends and Go was a real person. But you know, that's not the thing. But yeah, like, the most annoying thing is because him and Go are interacting off camera, we have no idea what Bano's really like. So it's kind of difficult to know. It's very suspicious that that's what's happening, because we know Go's been influenced in the past by like other people saying things to him. So like, how do we know what Bano's telling him about anything, and how do we know how he's going to act in the future? Because we're just not seeing their interaction. They obviously have some kind of relationship because Gofi was able to ask him for this, but other than that, like, it's just a very strange relationship that we're seeing very little of and expected to kind of just understand. And I'm like, well, no, you have to show us a few more things. It's kind of how it works, I would say.
Not according to the
obviously people. Not.
Yeah, but no, look, not, they could just not, show up and tell you how things go. And I mean, why would they show it to you? That'd be silly.
That's exactly how you tell a story.
I was going to say, you obviously think it was a visual medium. Yeah, right.
Why would you put any information on the screen? That's
a waste of time. You could say things. You're way better.
I'd like to turn. I kind of have a feeling that Yukari,
will never be seen again.
Oh man, I can't. No, that she's gonna be the big bad. That
really?
Bano is really? Going to use her as a tool, and he implanted some of his own data in her. And in like 7 episodes, in like 3 episodes, they'll touch bases with her, and then in like 7 episodes, it'll be revealed that she has been his instrument to like help build him his robot body that he's been wanting so desperately. And yeah, I think that'd be pretty awesome.
That would be pretty awesome.
That would be interesting. Like,
yeah, it would.
It's basically Bakura from Yu-Gi-Oh, but yeah. Like,
well, especially yeah, since well, like, I mean, at but, that point, that makes him a counter-Krim, because Krim has in many ways, like, not
got his robot
all
body.
The time, not full-time, but he has created himself for himself a temporary new body out of the flesh of Shinosuke.
Mm.
Who is the son of Tomari Isuke, who saved this girl's
yeah.
life, and she wouldn't be alive without him today.
That would be a really convoluted circle, but it's kind of beautiful in its way.
It's not nearly the most convoluted circle in Kamen Rider, we have to admit.
Nope.
It's not even the most convoluted circle in this series.
Nope.
But at least
that is also true.
It's poetic as hell. I like it.
Yeah.
It would be interesting.
That's what I'd like to see happen. I think it's possible that something like that could happen, but, you know, who knows? Isn't that kind of...
But then, like...
Wouldn't it be kind of like the, like how the Fangire King was, like, a big surprise at the end of the show? It's like, oh, it's this? Really? Huh?
But, like...
Yeah.
There seems to be an awful lot of focus on the Roymudes getting the Ultimate Evolutions. Like, that seems to be the big thing now.
She would be Bano's evolution.
Except
yeah, exactly.
It would be crazy and dumb.
But it's implied. I don't know. It's kind of implied the evolutions are linked to the cores more than anything else, which Bano doesn't have, I assume.
Or does he?
Or does he? Well, quite. Yeah. I mean,
he
who
is
knows?
The core.
Probably. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Who knows? Which.
Maybe the promise number becomes maybe the promise number isn't an amount. Well, no, maybe the promise number isn't an amount because all of them are numbers.
Well,
maybe the promise number is an individual,
oh,
and
yeah.
the promise number gets to become Bano's new body.
Oh, that
there's
would
a
be.
Dumb
so,
theory I just came up with off the top of my head.
Look! Would they go extra hard in? No, they can't do that because this isn't Guy, which is using all the appropriate Christian imagery. So I was like, so will he have the body? Will the promise number be 666? And get into that.
I was waiting for that.
Look, I'm a simple creature.
There's me theorizing on the fly.
I like it.
It's certainly interesting.
It makes as much sense as anything else in this series.
Honestly. I mean, and then you've got the whole, like, because Bano is basically their god then, because he's set up this, like, myth to make his, you know, creatures work for him, and it's all like it's a religion to them, basically. Like, it's an interesting concept. I'll go with that. You know. But then I guess, you know, what that says about religion, who knows? But I mean, you know. What that says about belief systems is probably more to the point. I didn't dump all the religion into that. Yeah.
Okay, so going from cool stuff to not so cool stuff. Question six. Has Go been redeemed?
No. By what? What did he do? Use Bono to save Yukari? Because that was Chase's idea. Go just showed up, screamed about not knowing what was going on, and then they have this hilariously uncomfortable thumbs up together.
Oh, that was so funny.
In this, like, that is amazing. That was probably my favorite part of the episode, because you just, the way they look at each other while it's happening, they're just like, also, neither, it's like, we both acknowledge that we hate each other, but...
Wait for this, like... Also, I do find it really weird, because, like, the whole thing was done is implied that they, like, had the camera standing on something, but I was like, why did they not do it as a selfie? That would have been, like, way more amusing.
Like, oh, no, they were periscoping it. Come on.
But I mean, like, Go...
I just love the idea of that awkward selfie. Like...
But, like, Go helped save Yukari, sort of, by being there and having the tablet. He allowed her to be saved. But he's a Kamen Rider, and he should be doing that anyway. I don't see what this needs to redeem, like, anything that he's done. This doesn't explain anything he's done or give any rationality behind why he's been such a huge jerk. So I don't see how this redeems him.
Well, this is the thing. Like, this is the thing. The show seems to kind of almost like just condone everything he's done. They're not even making comment on the fact that some of it's been hurtful or, you know, just massively shaded. Like, there's no. It's even worse than not redeeming him. It's just not addressing.
If we're not going to condone anything he's done, then what does he need to be redeemed for? His whole brief double cross. Because by not actually being evil and getting Bono, there's the supposed redemption for that.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's either not redeemed or doesn't need to be redeemed, depending on who.
Yeah.
Like who's deciding what he's done. So I don't see what he did in this episode that even brings up the question of, has he been redeemed?
Well, on the upside, he didn't say a whole lot.
Yeah, that was nice.
Mm.
And sadly, as part of not saying a whole lot, he is still yet to tell Kiriko about his goddad iPad. So
he hasn't even been in a scene with her in this episode, so... I mean, I'm not excusing it, but...
Has he told Shinosuke about it? Does he know?
I think he knows that the iPad exists, but I don't think they know that it's
Shinosuke doesn't know that Bano... He has Bano in the iPad. He just knows that Bano is Go's dad.
Right, okay.
Not allowed to tell Kiriko, even though that's supposedly, if they're siblings... Kiriko would know who her dad is.
Yeah.
They're just trying to make up reasons. Like, look, we need to lie to a woman in this episode. We need to keep something from her. Why? Because that's what Kamen Riders do.
Okay.
Wizard did it.
Yeah, and I have big problems with that episode, but that's not...
No. Do you really have a problem with that episode? The director episode? It was great.
Yes, it was. I have issues with the morality of lying to her, but that's my issue. But this is not about wizards, because I could talk for hours. But like,
I really don't know how I feel about that episode of Wizard, because I am sort of bothered by not telling her, but there's also like this issue. It's really weird, because they're, least in that specific instance, it's not out of malice.
Yeah,
there's nothing about it that is, meant to hide anything from her in order to save face with anyone else. It's just, yeah. We just want you to not be sad about this.
But like, on a theme level with Wizard, a lot of what it's about is actually like trying to work through the stuff that's the problem, and this is just kind of putting a massive block in the way of that, because if they're still lying to her, then she's still laboring under a delusion, and I'm kind of like, on a thematic level, I don't think that works.
It's an early episode, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
the cast themselves...
It's the mid-teens, definitely.
Yeah, so I really... At that point, I'm willing to kind of accept it in juxtaposition to the theme, because the cast themselves are still figuring out how to work through things.
Yeah.
And haven't fully come into knowing that sometimes you have to just step up.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. The morality of it bothers me a lot, but I don't know. But then I can see both sides, so it's very hard. Yeah, I can agree with you on that one. Anyway, this is not about Wizard, more the pity. But
you were going to go on about Go's redemption.
Oh, yeah.
And you believe in it so hard.
But he's had no time to redeem himself. I mean, if you're being really generous, then the redemption arc was him betraying the Roymudes, when actually he never was betraying the normal guys anyway. But you know, it's not really a redemption arc. He does a good thing, but it doesn't address anything he's already done, as people have said. Like, it's just... They just seem to be kind of like... It's kind of like they wrote him, and it's like somebody else wrote his character and they were going to do something with it, but then someone just went, no, this is too much of a train wreck, we're just going to, like, put him in the corner for the next, you know, the whole rest of the series. And I'm kind of thinking, like, is this how he's going to end the series? Just kind of as this, like, itinerant rider kind of not really doing a lot? Because if so, then the uncharitable part of me kind of is like, well, why even bother introducing him in the first place? Because he's literally doing nothing.
And if you don't got nothing for him, give him a good death. Write him out in a way that, where you're like, oh man, they killed that guy. That's really affecting. I care about this guy and wish he didn't die.
Yeah, you know who that would give some story to?
Kiriko.
Kiriko.
They could man-fridge him. I'm not, you know, look, I'm not a big fan of fridging as a plot device. But if you're gonna fridge someone, you know... Sheer numbers says, you know, throw the dude in the fridge,
and then we've got a belt free, and we all know who that's going to go to.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He's Akira. Done,
No, I was well.
Hayase?
I was going to say Hayase. Yeah, like why not? But you know.
You know, I was always voting for it to go to.
Well, totally.
That made sense.
I mean, like the fact that he's not been in it like forever. Is kind of, apart from Evan 26, was it? He's not been in it for a long time. Kind of says a lot about where that character arc kind of was going or not going.
I do want to see the things where it's like, right, so we've got a massive conflict with someone. Like, is it Go they have a conflict with? Is it Hayase they have a conflict with? Who is the person who can't show up to filming?
Sadness. I don't know, but I overall just think that they're wasting his character, which isn't really fair on him, you know, on him as an actor, if nothing else. But like as you say, you know, do something with him, even if it is killing him off. Do something in a way that makes us care about the characters, because that's what the whole point of this. If there's nothing for him to do, then there's no point in him even being there. And to be honest, like. If you could have got rid of a lot of the episodes that mostly featured him in it, I don't think the series would lose much, and that's saying a lot, really, about secondary writers. But, like, if it was just Shinosuke and Chase, I think I would have made a better series, which is really awful, but, like, that's how it feels.
No, that's not awful. That's, I think, I feel
bad for kind of, like, just writing off someone's entire performance in something, but, you know, like...
Look.
I'm not going to blame his actor. His actor is really trying and going for it, but the writers just aren't giving him things to do.
Yeah, that's fair.
The episode where he's unloading to Shinosuke about it's my dad, and he's shaking and shivering, like, oh, I get it, dude. You're still lying, and I don't approve of that, but I see where you're coming from.
Mm.
And then, like, 10 episodes of just Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah. It's a writing thing, but that, you know, that's just and it's just a mess. That's the simplest way to put it. And he's just been a huge tool, and you can't really forgive that. So, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of tools. That's how I'm going to move on to every question.
We're so good at segues in this show.
Yeah. Masters.
Okay, see. This is the rider who drives a car. The next rider rides a Segway.
It's the next
Could you imagine if Cougar had done that? Like, you know, in all those scenes where, like, he puts people on the front of his motorbike and, like, just drives them into various places? And I've never worked out how that works, because surely they would climb up the motorbike. But anyway.
Giant needle armor on the Segway.
Gosh.
Oh.
Never mind. I don't want to talk about the run-up to the Segway. It was stupid.
Yes, it really was.
Oh, man.
You don't have a run-up to a Segway. Generally, you just sort of step on it and it goes, you know, it's kind of a thing.
Alright. Anyway, question 7. Move it on. Did we have too little Krim as Trideron this episode?
Any amount of Krim as Trideron is not enough of Krim as Trideron, because I really love the suit acting.
It's very well
that
done.
That they do for Krim. Just the shift between Krim and Shinosuke in suit, I think, is really beautiful. And I would love to see more of it instead of just, like, 3 seconds of Krim and then we're back to Shinosuke.
It's kind of unclear why they shift as well. Like, that was a little bit... Like, I kind of get it, but it wasn't really made very clear in the episode.
Krim was just like, I want to do it.
No.
Krim's just like, let me do it. Let me do this for a minute.
Let me borrow your flesh.
You always make it sound creepy. Like,
is it not?
I don't think it's weird. I don't think it's strange. Like, it kind of just makes sense to me.
It's just the way he brought him back, that just, like, there was that bit where he was piloting Shinosuke's body.
With the red eye, and
That was unsettling.
When they're crazy magical sand monsters, I give it a lot more leeway, because they're magic.
Okay, but double.
Trim is basically magic, like, let's be honest.
Have you watched him when he does the kick and he splits in half?
Yes, like, that is completely horrifying, and that's why I'm glad.
See, like, I don't think it's in the least bit horrifying. I don't find it in any way bizarre. Am I strange?
It's disgusting and disturbing.
And the first time he's ripping himself open,
and there's the gold, and there's, like, the silver glow underneath, like, oh.
Think about the things that happen to bodies in double.
Think about the things that happen. But it isn't a body.
It is a body.
They are not garnet.
Okay.
No, I know they're not.
Two little gems just floating in there, projecting light at each other.
Actually, in extreme, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Point.
In extreme, that's exactly what they are.
Like, I don't know, I just don't find it in any way... I don't know, maybe I'm very strange. I don't know, I don't find it in any way horrifying. It's just a thing that happens. I don't see it as, like... I don't see it as being weird. Like, it's just, like, that's how they do things. That's their way of doing it. It's not weird, it's just... And I don't know, maybe it's just when they're in suit, I don't see them as actually being human. Like, they're not... Which is weird. I don't know how that works, but like it's very odd. Until you guys started talking about this, I've never ever looked at that kind of thing and gone, "Oh, that's disgusting." I'm just kind of going, "Oh, that's how they do their rider kick." All right.
I mean, disgusting isn't the word I that comes to mind for me. It's
unsettling.
Horrifyingly painful.
Okay,
I have a very, very low pain tolerance.
Oh, okay, fair.
And I have an immensely low pain tolerance. And the idea of things, I can
that makes sense.
Like, I can process how it would feel, and I get really freaked out.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Like, I don't know, like, if I saw somebody having their arm hacked off, like, yeah, that would, you know, that's pretty. But then you see that's flesh and metal and that kind of thing. Whereas like when they're in suit, there's a kind of a dehumanizing aspect, and maybe that's what makes me more accepting. I don't know. It is kind of like, because that's why I do find it strange when you see that the broken helmet thing, because it's kind of odd for me to imagine there are actually people inside this thing. I don't know, it's very strange. I've never really analysed my own psyche in that way, but it's interesting. Yeah, like when you talk about the kind of body horror aspect of things, I've never thought about it like that. So, you know, well done for introducing me to something new.
You're welcome.
Maybe it's time for some introspection.
But
it's going to turn like my counselling session or like recorded live on the internet for thousands of people to hear.
Speaking of Krim, though.
Very generous to think that our listenership is that big.
Yeah.
Well, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm bad at counting, so it could be anywhere between like 10 and a million. And I probably wouldn't know the difference, so you know.
I thought you were a math major, man.
I know that numbers can be counted. I can't actually count them.
Ah, understood.
It's like, you know, I can prove you that.
It's like me and colors. Like, I'm partially colorblind. Look, I'm aware that red and green are, like, there is a point where they are absolutely not one another. I have a hard time finding it.
Hmm. Fair enough. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Sony, you were saying about Krim. We've completely derailed this conversation.
Well, welcome to this show. How many times have I done that?
I've forgotten what it was like being away and stuff. Come back, you're like, oh,
I really do think we had a lot of nice stuff with, like, Krim and the shift cars in this episode, though,
that we've been missing
for the vast majority of the show. That was an absolutely masterful use of Dimension Cab.
Oh yeah, and I will say this, right? Rewatch value on this episode is like as high as it's ever been. Like as soon as it was finished, I wound back and I was like, because I was watching that, because like, and it's like that frame by frame analysis thing of that thing with Nira, where you're like, because when you see the reveal, you're like, because that's what I really love in shows is where they do those kind of reveals, and you're like, actually, I could have put all the pieces together myself, but I didn't see it, and then they're like, oh, there it is.
Well, like, Shinosuke mentions, like, this whole, oh, I wish I could walk through walls and then I could save everyone. And I thought
Cap. Oh, yeah, I was going to say,
But for some reason, I thought Brain had taken the bag with him, which makes absolutely no sense. I don't know why I thought that, because he went directly outside. So, like, but it didn't even occur to me, like, wait, Cap should be able to get out of this bag.
Yeah, no,
I didn't even think of that, because I was so caught up in what was happening.
Yeah, totally.
That I completely miss that there's this obvious answer, and then they use this trick of verbal cues to relay information really well in this episode, like him laughing at the video clip that he sees that Nira doesn't, and how quickly he's able to just like, oh no, that's me kind of falling into my own despair on this, and the whole reveal of, like, SCU tricking Nira and Brain, and Kiriko walking into the room, and Nira's reaction to it.
Yeah.
It felt very much like the cop dramas that Drive has always wanted to emulate.
Mm.
And I really loved it.
It was like the first time they've kind of really succeeded and really hit the mark. Like, it was a great episode. It really was. Like, I really enjoyed it. 36
is probably my favorite episode of Drive.
Oh, absolutely.
I think I'm definitely with you on that.
They really hit the mark every step of the way.
Yeah, and it's so intense as well. Like, there were some bits, like, I don't know, but even the humour was, like, well-placed. Like, the bit with Brain and the Roymus where they're trying to, like, fix the computer, like, that was hilarious. Even though it's, even though it's in this really, like, kind of, but all the scenes between Shinosuke and Nira, even though they're just in one room, they're so intense. It's just, they really did a good thing with this episode. I just hope that if they keep the quality up like this, then, you know, the end of the series could be actually, you know, halfway, like, really pretty good. Like, hopefully.
Yeah, like, I do desperately want Drive to stick the landing. I really do.
Yeah, I hope so.
I do have a lot of positive feelings towards this show and things in it, and we're hard on it, and I'm as hard on it as any of us.
Mm.
But, like, I really want to see it pull it off in the end.
I think, you know, I'm completely with you on that. Like,
I want to have fun. I want to enjoy myself. Yeah.
See, this is the thing, like, this week was one of the first times, like, it's been getting better over the last couple of weeks, but, like, I really enjoyed watching this episode. Like, this is just, like, you know, it kind of, and, like, And there's been a whole thing, like, since kind of post-game, like, I don't know, 40-something, like, where just, you're like, every week is kind of like, oh, come on, like, really, like, and there's little bits, but, like, nothing ever kind of, and this week it just kind of hit me, and I was like, oh, yes, I remember why I'm a fan of the show now, because this
is like, I came out of this episode like, what is this feeling? Is this how it feels to enjoy Kamen Rider? I forgot this. I forgot how this feels to be, like, really deeply invested in what's going on and every, like, the deals that's going on with everyone.
Yeah. And it's just, this was a very good episode. And, like, it's been, I was so hyped. Like, as soon as I finished watching it, I was like, we have to record the show, like, right now, because this is going to be awesome. It's just too hard.
No wonder you watched it,
right? Oh, totally.
All right, well, Aleph, why don't you share your thoughts on this?
Oh, well, I think the only thing I really wanted to say is that I want more of type Tridoron, because, again, for all I've got my creepy necromancer feels about the whole thing, like, it's sort of a late in the game, we've decided that Krim and Shinosuke are a new double, and I would like for us to lean into that a little more, like, I'm sure later episodes will do that, because this one was very much a Shinosuke episode. But, like, they're trying to sell this toy, so how about you sell us on its main lore-based feature? Because I think it's a neat feature, and it's nice to have Krim be an active participant, especially given that, like, I always forget his name. It's the same guy. He's Mr. Kamen Rider. How do I forget his name? Taikawa?
Taikawa, yes.
Takawa, thank you. Like, the way he plays Krim is great. His body
It's completely different to how he plays Shinosuke. Yeah. It's like,
It's the same way when he was doing Den-O, and you're watching, and it's like, oh wait, that's the same dude in the suit?
Yeah.
Did they not just cut to a different dude at some point? No? It's one dude. Okay.
Yeah, no, he's a phenomenal actor, and I'm really glad to see him getting to really, like, put his chops on the line. Mm.
And also, like, because the other thing as well, like, type Tridoron is far more practical than other certain final forms have been in recent years.
Yeah, like, it's one of the best-looking final forms.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because that is one of the things I will say about Wizard, is that I don't really like Infinity, like, the way it looks. It's not the best thing in the world. Like, I like the axe, or the axe caliber.
That's the thing I like about the suit. Everything else is great.
Oh, I love the suit. I'm fine with the axe.
It's too bulky to my mind, but I mean, you know, I really like Flame Dragon. That's one of my, like, I really think that's kind of, the rest of the dragon forms are not as good, and the final one with the big dragon out of the chest, I'm kind of a bit like, it's okay, but you know. But Infinity, I like as an idea, but the execution wasn't as... But anyway, sorry. But no, Type Tridoron is very, very good. It's very sleek, and I like it a lot. So it's good to see them getting some use out of it. And I agree, like, more of... As much more of the suit actors as we can, because they're so good at what they do.
Okay. John, did you have anything else you needed to say for 7? I thought you did.
But yeah, no, I have a lot to say. There's, like, pages. I might save some of it, because there's bits about themes that I'll kind of bring up a bit later. I think it did seem a bit jarring to switch mid-battle. That was the only thing I did think. But Engels, because it was for such a short period of time, like, I wish they'd kind of been, like, just one more line of dialogue to explain why. Because, like, I kind of like the idea that with... in a similar way to how Sei and Reiji do it in Gundam Build Fighters, that, like, one of them is the pilot and the other one's, like, kind of doing all the stuff in the background, but occasionally they could switch around because one of them is slightly better at something else than the other guy. Like, I like the idea that kind of, like, that Krim can get the most out of the suit because he knows mechanically how to do it, but Shinosuke is actually the one who knows how to fight, so between them they kind of compensate for each other in that sense. I like that idea, but that's not really explained. You kind of left to pick that up for yourself, which might be the point, but, you know, I would like a little bit more explanation, maybe. But, you know, that's the thing. I mean, like, I completely agree that, like, this episode was awesome, as I've already said. It was so on point, and they had, like, there was elements of so many of my, like, favorite cop shows. They had, like, there was quite a lot of Sherlock elements in it, I thought. There was quite a kind of, especially with the whole kind of, like, we'll play you a scene, and then we'll put it back together and show you actually how it went down, and how people survived, and that kind of thing, which I thought was really cool. But also, like, one of the things I did think was, especially when Brain had the three security guys with him that were actually Roy Mutes, I thought, like, they could have pushed more the kind of angle of, like, the Roymudes are among us, but we don't know who they are kind of thing. Very much kind of in the style of, like, BSG and Animorphs, which I think... which I would have liked them to have explored a bit more, and I wonder if... but I don't think they're going to, because now the secret's kind of out with everybody. But, like, I wish in the first arc they'd used that a lot more, because the first arc feels really wasted now by comparison to kind of what's going on. Like, in many ways, I wish they'd kind of, like, they'd... I wish they'd gone for, like, a two-arc structure this year, like, broken the formula a bit, and then had kind of a longer first act that encompassed, like, what we've got now as one and two. Forget about Go, because he's so superfluous. And kind of, like, and then have a longer second arc to, like, and mix the focus episodes in, and then you've got more time to build. Because I think that's really what... The first act just seems incredibly rushed, and then it kind of seems to find its feet a bit more. So I really wish they kind of evened it out along the structure lines. But... I mean, they're obviously... But then this three-act structure seems so popular now. It's been the same for, like, the past 5 or 6 seasons. I just wish they would kind of mix it up a bit. But, yeah, I'll say more about my themes later on.
Okay. So, let's see. The question is... enough crime. Yeah, there was definitely not enough crime, and, like, there is no reason that he should have switched as soon as he did. Like, he can't do a rider kick? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that would have been cool. But
anyway, let's see. Question 8. Is it a failing that only Kiriko showed up at the end of the episode?
She was still in jail then, wasn't she? Like, up until the point where she walks into the room, she was still in jail, as was everyone else. I mean, I think the only real failing here is, like, the lack of explanation as to when she goes from being in jail to not being in jail.
Yeah.
Like, who let everyone out? Tamari? I mean, I guess Chase and Go show up with Yukari and, like, get Tamari, and they all go and get everyone out of SCU, from SCU out of the jail somehow. I can't imagine they would have keys. So I don't know how that happened. Maybe
wouldn't it be cool if there was, like, a really gritty scene of them killing all these police officers to break them out of jail?
I mean, maybe
no,
like
that would be like the opposite of cool.
Really,
I mean, maybe
prove that this isn't for children.
Like, maybe they just had Dimension Cab, like, do a portal out or something, or had Hunter, like, unlock the door some way. But I can't imagine where else Kiriko would have come in prior to this, in this episode, because unless it was to show SCU sulking in the cell, which seems really unnecessary, and would break a lot of the dramatic tension of Kiriko just walking into the room.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm glad, like, they didn't show them getting out of the cell, just because Kiriko walking into that room when she did, being like, "Y'all are liars! Everything you said is wrong. Hey, look who I've got." Like, that would have ruined the way that scene went. And, like, everything fell into place so nicely that I don't think Kiriko showing up at the end of this episode is a fail. Because we have had episodes, or at least one arc that was mostly Kiriko, and then everyone else shows up later. I'm fine with that. I don't think it's a failing of the episode. I think the way Kiriko has been treated as a whole has been a failing of the show.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
But this specific episode, I don't think that's a failing. I think that's just the way the dramatic tension went. And the fact that Kiriko was the one who was given the, I guess, privilege of giving Neera that first punch. Metaphorical punch, but nonetheless, of look, it's like you thought you had us all, and you don't have anything. And she gets to do that. It wasn't Shinosuke, it wasn't Ota, it wasn't Chase, it wasn't Go. Kiriko got to be the one to walk in and call him a liar.
I do kind of wish that, like, when Shinosuke came back, he'd brought the whole of SCU with him as well. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know where, like, everyone else was.
Like, that,
I'm really confused by that.
I wish they could have all been involved, because it kind of did feel like my team is, you know, I'm more than myself. I think that was kind of the whole point of the scene with Neera, and, like, the way that he got out of it was actually that it was about so much more than him just being him just being a good cop or him just being a great person. It was actually about the fact that he had the team presenting him in different ways. And so if they'd all come in together at the end, it would have actually felt like he was like, no, we're here now, we've won, kind of thing. Together, rather
than... about it, they all should have, because who set up all of these cameras and video feeds?
Exactly.
Like, if you have everyone else walk in behind Shinosuke and have Rina and Q being like, ha ha ha, we got you.
Loser.
Like, that would have been pretty great. And I was confused as to where all of them were.
That's like my one. That was like my one major complaint, because that's what I expected during the scene was going to happen. I thought they were. Like, I thought they were all going to walk in, because that was, you know, that's what I expected. But it's reasonably minor, I guess. I would have liked it, but I can kind of. But as you say, I can kind of understand where they were going with the direct tension. So yeah, like I can give it a pass, I guess.
And like, okay, here's me being generous for a change. Like, I kind of like that she's the one who gets to do this thing.
Mm.
Like, she's supposed to be his real partner. So she's the one who gets to come in and pull the trigger on, by the way, dude, we gotcha. I mean, again, I want a lot more Kiriko. I want tons more
Kiriko. We all do.
Yeah,
especially correct. Like, especially out of, okay, it's a little late for me to bring this up. I brought it up way at the start. I still am sort of weirded out by her cop uniform. It's just too stylized, and it feels almost like it's supposed to be a cute outfit as opposed to a practical one.
Have you looked at Japanese women's police outfits?
Okay, I could be wrong there.
Because it's actually, it's very... There's a lot more detail to it, and the skirt is slightly different, but I actually like that the skirt is different because she can run and jump and kick in this.
Yeah.
Where actual police uniform skirts are fit much closer.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then that could just be me, like, misreading stuff, and I'm happy to admit I could be wrong. Heck, I'm happy to admit I am wrong. Let's take out the weasel words. Look, I know myself, I'm a coward, I'm a liar, I'm a terrible person. So I have to be honest when I'm trying to be a good guy. And when I'm admitting when I'm wrong. Which I am. Except about Kiriko. We need a lot more Kiriko.
Yes, that is true.
To take a page from Sona's book, I will fight. I will fight for Kiriko.
I will. Here, I'm going to... I found the uniform.
Oh yeah, Sona did a great little piece. Actually, I mean, not little. It was extensive, I feel, about...
About Kiriko's uniform.
Very early on.
I will dig that up as well, because it's on a blog that I started and then stopped having time to do once I got a job more related to my career.
Yeah, absolutely wrong. I am absolutely wrong. That's basically the same uniform. Kind of like the actual uniform's hat a little better.
That was the first episode. Where do I did I tag these?
Well, we can put them in the show notes.
Mm. Yeah, no, I'm just trying. Hey. Here it is. I did. Yes, it's in the middle of me talking about the first trailer for Drive, but I do write a bit on, and there's another photo of two Japanese police women in it to compare to her uniform.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Jonathan, you had more to say?
Sorry, I'm too many questions. I think pretty much just Booper has been covered. Like, I wish they'd had more of like the whole of SCU, because I think that's kind of what this is. I'll talk more about this later on, but I think a lot of what this is coming down, like what this is coming down to, is all about the kind of the pro-social team and family kind of thing coming together, and I think it would have really kind of like cemented the theme of on the episode had they all kind of walked in together and been like, actually, you know, we defeated you together rather than alone, and I would have really, but you know, that's quite a minor thing, because they were still doing their stuff in the background, and it wasn't just Shinosuke. I think that's what, if it had just been him, that would have killed it. But the fact that Kiriko was there as well kind of she's kind of representative of SCU, I guess, but it would have been nice to have them all there. That's kind of how I feel, I guess.
Let me try that again. Okay, fair enough. By the way, I like how one of the pictures, Sona, that you have on your blog is of those police ladies helping out that old lady.
Yes.
Very cool.
It's actually hard to find a good photo, or maybe I'm just not using good search terms. So I think at the time, this was the only one I could find, but I thought I'd wanted a more frontal to kind of be a direct comparison to how Kiriko was posed in the magazine shot.
Yeah.
But this was still a pretty good representation. And again, I do think that it's, aside from the cut of the skirt, which I think was a good choice to use for Kiriko with what she does, I still think it's a pretty close translation of the general uniform.
I wish her hat was a bit bigger.
I'm not sure what's up with the hat choice.
It's a bit of a token gesture. Like that's what it seems like. Ever since I first saw the trailer, I was like, her hat's just too small. Like, it's just a little bit bigger.
A weird thing that I've seen in a lot of the cat, like the on-set photos, is anytime Kiriko is in uniform in a photo, they will cover her hat with their hands. Like other people in the photo will cover her uniform hat, and I'm not sure why that is. I've never seen anyone give a reason as to why that is. I've seen other people question it, but I've never seen an answer. If anyone listening knows why that is, if there's some kind of
in joke or
political thing, like, I don't know. I don't know why. If anyone knows, please let me know, because I would love to have an answer to that. It's been bothering me the entire show as to why they're doing that. I would like an answer.
Yeah, that definitely seems very weird. Let's see. Yeah, I would say, just succinctly, I wish that, I do think it's a bit of a failing, because I think that the others should have showed up, even maybe when Nero was being arrested, the other SCU members
yeah,
should have shown
that's
up.
True.
Like, I would have been satisfied with that. It just seems strange to
misread this question. I completely, and now my answer doesn't make sense as to what the question is. I read that is that is it a failing that Kiriko only shows up at the end of the episode, not that it's only Kiriko. I completely misread that question.
That's okay. It was still, you covered other stuff that works, you know, so.
So that is why my answer makes no sense to anyone reading the questions along with listening to this. But yes, I do believe it's a failing that it's only Kiriko. Everyone else should have been there.
Okay, so the penultimate question, here we go. Question 9. How do you feel about a Kamen Rider holding a gun on a civilian, no matter how jerky they are?
I want to preface this with the fact that Nira is not a civilian. I don't know if we can really qualify Nira as a civilian, given the fact that, one, he's in the police, and two, he is bonded to Brain. So I don't really consider Nira a civilian. And pulling the gun on Nira, I can deal with as a facet of Shinosuke playing along with Nira's game and kind of tricking the trickster. I can deal with him pulling the gun. It did bother me that he fired the gun.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the difference.
Even with him playing the game, I'm not sure him firing the gun was necessary, even with the intentional miss.
I don't know if it was an intentional miss. I'm really not sure. I've rewatched it about 4 times, and I can't decide whether he kind of, like, he just,
it was,
like...
It was after he knew Yukari was okay, and that's why I'm
okay. No, that's...
Because at that point, he knew
that goading him doesn't make a difference, yeah.
And he had already given Krim the signal to send Dimension Cab, and he knew that Yukari was okay.
Yeah,
so I'm
true.
Calling it an intentional miss that was meant to be playing Nira's game. But Nira, he could have easily kind of goaded Nira into shooting him and Nira say that Shinosuke was going to transform, I had to shoot him or the Kamen Rider would have killed me. Our Rider using a regular gun to fire on a human, even if that human is not a civilian, feels really, really off to me. It just, him shooting the gun doesn't sit right.
No, you are so not alone there. Like, look, I know that this is a work of intentionally constructed fiction, but just the idea that anyone at all could be so sure of their ability with a pistol that they could miss by that small a margin, it's one of those things where it's like they're really close to saying that he's 100% good and right and infallible and we should not question our superhero god figure. And I'm never comfortable with that idea. Because, like, here's the thing. If you have a gun, and even if you are some sort of sicko who's playing with someone and gonna pretend to try to kill them, you fire into the air, you fire out a window, you don't shoot the gun at all, because you could miss. Like, even the best crack shot in the world, sometimes they miss, sometimes the gun jams, sometimes just some stupid mechanical thing happens in the revolver. You don't know. You don't have that control. It's, and besides that, I mean, yes, there is the thing of, like, there's a difference between superheroes punching people, punching supervillains, and a dude holding a gun on another dude.
Definitely.
Of remove you were talking about, Jonathan.
Yeah, especially because of, like, of how kids could see it as well. Like, if you see Kamen Rider punching another monster, then that's kind of what you expect. But, like, you don't. But, like, to see a guy pointing a gun at somebody else, it's quite, you know, that's like, because there was one point where after he shot, I legitimately thought he was going to have shot Nira in the head. I was like, that's a dark move if that's what they're going for. But, you know, like,
missing, it's pretty dark.
Oh no, that's true. And I mean, like, I kind of like, I don't know whether I would have given them props for going down that route or not, but like the fact that I was so worried that he actually would genuinely follow through, especially because of like the amount of goading that was going on, I was kind of like, if I was a kid watching this, I don't know how I'd feel about it. It's kind of, I don't know, like it's kind of hard to say, and I kind of worry about the way that that's portrayed, because it's, you know, because Shinosuke is the hero, and you're kind of like, oh well, you know, he must be the good guy, but that's still, you know, and Nira is obviously evil, but like, it's still, you know, morally still very, yeah.
Face.
Yeah, and like,
no,
with,
very true, very
like,
true.
With the goading going on, I want to, you know, do what we do on this show and bring it back to Kuga. And that one scene in Kuga with Godai and Nana.
Yeah.
Where Godai's right, like, it's
everyone,
okay.
I wasn't the one who brought that up.
Yep, nope, you don't get to take a shot on that one. It was me. So, but, like, it's okay to be angry at someone who says these things, but you don't hurt them. Because that doesn't solve the problem. It's fine to be angry. It's fine to get angry, but you can't hurt them. You can't just act out on it, because then you're not solving the problem.
See, I thought you were referring to the bit in Kuga where he goes like crazy on the Grongi.
I feel like they were trying to evoke that. I just don't think they got there. So, I mean,
maybe it's
that's even
the thing is like this was
35 or 36 too, isn't that?
Definitely mid-30s, if not bang on, yeah, definitely around there.
I mean, I'm just calling back to, because this is all between humans. In this scene.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Everything is between humans and human acts of violence. This isn't Shinosuke using anything that Drive has.
No, that's true.
So it's just, it feels like it really flies in the face of that scene and that message, and I'm just really not okay with him having shot that gun. I really expected him to pull the gun and then later drop it.
Yeah, I thought, that's not the way I thought it was going to go. I thought it was going to be like, after he knew everything was fine, he was going to throw the gun away and be like, well, fine, shoot me then. whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I can't, you know, I can't win this game.
Like, I can't get out of this?
The only, you know, I can't win this game.
The time is up. Like, he's like, the time is up. I can't do anything. Just, you know what? Just shoot me then. You won.
Yeah.
Because Nira would have shot him. Nira still would have shot him.
Well, and also, if anything, it might have made Nira even more angry, because he knows that's, because, like, if, you know, because the last thing that, any, you know, like, because he's a crazy supervillain, but the last thing he's going to want is for the guy to accept it. You know, he's going to want him to die screaming, because that's, you know, the sadistic way to do things.
So, I mean, like, you know. The only reason I can think of that they had Shinosuke shoot the gun, other than just poor writing, is Brain calls attention to the fact that this was all filmed. And they needed, I assume that the film has no audio, because otherwise that makes no sense.
Yeah.
But if Shinosuke shoots first, I mean, granted, the footage on the video should not have corroborated his story anyway.
No.
I was guessing there's some sort of, like, on-the-fly editing going on.
Oh, no, totally. Yeah, like, I love that whole idea that they were, like, filming it and completely manipulating it. I thought it was really, really great, like, in terms of, as a concept, because it was like, oh, you know, even your evidence is lying to you, but, and we're just putting one more roadblock in your way, but you'll still, like, get around it, you know?
They have Shinosuke transforming on film.
Yeah.
If they were filming the whole thing, Brain could have edited it together in a way. It's just, I don't see why Shinosuke had to shoot the gun, and it really bothers me.
Mm.
Well, I want to hear Jonathan's thoughts on this, and then I'll say what I have to say, and then we'll get on to question 10, because we have a lot of listener input.
Yeah.
Oh, God, we do.
Like, I think it was a really odd choice. It was kind of like Batman throwing the Joker off the top of a building and then at the last minute, like, grappling hooking him and being like, oh no, I made a terrible mistake kind of thing. It just felt like he was kind of betraying his own moral code, which is a bit strange. It was very, very off. I'm still not, like you say, I can't see any conceivable reason why he would do it, especially after, cause as you say, it's after he knows everything's fine. So it's kind of like, I can understand him not wanting to break the illusion from Nira's point of view, but I don't think you had to fire the gun to achieve that. So, it was a very, very off thing, and I'm still not sure how I feel about it. Yeah.
Okay. Did you want to add anything else?
No, not really. No, I think most of it's been kind of like, most of it's been said, really.
Okay. So let me see. Yeah, I'm, maybe civilian was a poor choice of word. I guess I meant, you know, not a Kaijin.
Yeah.
Even if it was a criminal, a criminal human, which I guess Nira qualifies as that, like, it's not okay for Kamen Rider to do that.
Well, to be fair, we had the whole thing with Ota, so this show has kind of been a bit kind of playing fast and loose with who it's okay to pull a gun on, so, you know.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that makes it okay, but there is precedent for this kind of thing happening before. And maybe, I don't know, maybe it is a cultural sensibility that we don't have. I don't know, I can't, you know, I don't know how police act in Japan.
It's just ironic, because guns are illegal in Japan except for the police.
Exactly.
And,
well,
and when you do have them, they're very strictly regulated.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just it, they don't have the cultural, like, maybe there's a cultural distance between
maybe.
A gun and death, where it's,
maybe,
which
yeah.
we, like, a lot of Americans here, and I would assume also even the dude in England is probably like, a gun. Yikes. No, thank you.
That's pretty much, I can agree with you. Even though they're not legal to carry, like, you do see, like, when the police carry them, you know, shit's got serious kind of thing. Like, it's pretty, maybe there is a big cultural distance, who knows?
And I'm very loath to put that in, because I always hate being like, they, like, you know, like some sort of unknowable alien race or something. But it's just,
yeah,
there's a cultural thing, there's possibly a cultural thing going on, and I think that could be an interesting thing to acknowledge.
And it's interesting, because, like, well, anyway. I have possibly interesting opinions about guns, but, like, you know, a Kamen Rider definitely should not be holding one, even if he's a cop, on somebody like Nira. And, like, Anyway.
No, I agree. There was an interesting discussion actually with in Doctor Who fandom, because you know that's a thing I like. In season two, there's a scene where there's four characters in a spaceship, and one of them is getting like possessed by the spirit of the devil, and so the Doctor's companion grabs a bolt gun and shoots a window open, and then pushes him out into space rather than just shooting him in the head with a bolt gun. And everyone was kind of like, oh, why didn't she just kill him that way? And everyone was like, but as a Doctor Who companion, she can't just pick up a bolt gun and shoot him through the head. That doesn't work. And so it was a really interesting kind of, you know...
Take out even as a Doctor Who companion. Like, you know, a lot of people like to talk a lot of crap about how, like, oh, it's easy, just decide to kill someone. Like, the choice to murder another human being drives most people insane with guilt. That is the thing... we're made for. We're good at it, but it's not a thing we're made for.
Yeah. I just think it was interesting because they were having almost the same debate, but they took it a completely different route. And she still and the weird thing is that the end result for her is still the same, and that he's still, you know, he still dies. But like, you know, it was just interesting that kind of like making it more oblique made it kind of more acceptable in a strange way. And I guess that's kind of the thing here in a sense, but I just thought it was an interesting kind of parallel to bring up, but yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I so fully am not okay with a writer doing that I expected Shinosuke to just let himself get shot and somehow it would be okay. Like, I mean, I was even, like, kind of tearing up as Nero was continuing to pile on, and I was like, man, Shinosuke's, like, really having a hard time.
Yeah, like, it was, especially yeah, cause, it was pretty like, bad.
He deifies his father so much, and, you know, good or bad, it's true for him, and he's being really impacted by this, and, like, him crying, which I think the actor did great.
Yeah, songs, definitely.
Wonderful.
Ryoma, which I can't believe I keep getting surprised when, like, ass common writer names characters in the shows like end up being like the actors.
Oh well,
you know, in following series
in Forze, and like Kengo, like the name of Kengo's actor is Ryusei.
Oh, how funny!
Oh, that's kind of amusing.
That is really funny. But like, you know, I went from hating a Ryoma associated with common writer to then, you know, holding this guy in like really good light because I think he's a pretty good actor,
definitely.
And I just his performance really had me getting emotional, and I was like, man, I believe from the way he's acting that Shinosuke is gonna like throw down his gun and say like I on my pride as an officer I'm not gonna do this. So it is a little disappointing that he shot because of that and other things, just because he's the writer. But anyway. Final thought, John, and then we'll move to questions.
I agree with you in that, like, I really felt for him during that scene, because Nero is just completely, like, not, there's no holds barred, he's just, like, going to completely destroy everything he believes in, and I'm kind of like, well, you know, in a sense, I don't agree, like, I would never shoot, even come close to shooting somebody else, but, like, I can kind of understand where the completely pent-up frustration comes from. Not that that excuses it, but I do, like, I can at least kind of vaguely get a sense of, you know, where that's going from, which is a testament to his performance as an actor, and I think kind of just adds something else to why I really like this episode, even with the problematic elements that we've just identified.
Okay, and then moving on to Nera. Question 10 is, was Nera a worthy foe, or just a distraction?
It was a little bit of both, really. I mean, Shinosuke had to pull some really serious tricks to get out of this. He was in pretty legitimate danger against Nera, and if Nera had shot him any sooner, it wouldn't have turned out the way it did. And on Nera's word, the whole SCU has been dissolved at least twice over the course of this show. Once to the point where they can't do anything because they've been thrown in jail. So from the protagonist's side, Nera was a pretty valid threat. Not more in the sense of kind of breaking everyone apart, instead of being like, I'm going to kill you all right here and now without any effort, he was a very legitimate threat in what he was able to accomplish against them. And for a while, and he's had this motivation the whole time, and for a while they legitimately thought he was on their side. He was able to become one of them. But, I mean, he was also being used by Brain as a means to an end. That end being Brain's ultimate evolution, and a distraction so that Hart could reclaim Bono and that the endgame could be advanced. He was a potentially useful tool, but they always had a plan B in mind, and he was just a good opportunity that Brain tried to seize to use as a distraction against SCU. So I think it's a little bit of both.
And B, like, again, I'm back in my normal role as Mr. Uncharitable. Like, I like all the things. Like, I agree with everything you just said. Like, he has been such a great threat to the characters. He has been a great mastermind. He has been all of the things I've been wanting in this show for so long, but he's just such this massive missed opportunity for me, because he comes off like a less egregious version of Oren from back in Gaim. Like, any threat he could pose from an audience point of view, he is constantly undercut by the fact that they portray him as a clown. Like, I get that, I feel like they're going for like, I don't know the proper Japanese pop cultural comparisons to make, but it's like the Frank Gorshin Riddler from Batman 66, or the Mark Hamill Joker from the Batman animated series, who's got these sudden changes between happy-go-lucky to cold murder. And just doesn't stick the landing, and while in the context of the show he's a great threat, I'm just over here being like, get off screen, get off screen, get off screen. Oh, you all think he's a hero now? This guy who has always been the evil bureaucrat who's constantly lampshading how evil he is? Oh, he turned out to be a villain? No! And just that sort of break between where where I, as a member of the audience, am at, and where the characters on the screen are at, is always so jarring for me.
Yeah, I think I would probably say that I think he was a good casting choice, but ruined by directing choices. I think that's one of the problems. Like, as you
I
say, the ed- like the edits were a real issue. Like, why they
yeah,
felt we need the to ed- do that, I
the
don't
edits
really know.
Are always a real issue in this show.
Yeah, they seem to, they probably have like one guy on the staff who's like really into these like really crazy internet edits, and other than that, like, everyone's just like,
that guy needs to,
why would you do that?
Get like, over it or get fired.
Yeah.
Or get something else that I'm not going to say because we don't have an explicit tag.
Maybe some retraining would help.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
We'll show him some, like, real, you know, like, real editing. watch, I don't know. It just, like, there's been an awful lot of that this series, and it's, like, to be fair to them, it has got less as time's gone on. And I wonder if that's because they're running out of money, so they can't do it as much, which can only be an advantage. But, you know, like, I think the directing choices were very off for Nira, and, like, I think, and considering how he wasn't some of the quieter moments, I think he definitely had quite a bit of gravitas, but I would have preferred somebody with a bit more. I just think that there was this role was very good, and he did a very good job. I just think there was it might have even gone to another level had like they not had these idiotic directing choices, and like somebody that could pull off both the kind of craziness and sort of madness kind of would have worked well. I think
I'd be a lot more okay with his like weird madness, if that's what we're calling it, is if it had been like in the first part of Bad Nira, when he was just like the cop that wanted to like the cop bureaucrat that wanted to mess with them, and then when he kind of switches sides, he's kind of a little more chill and is like, you know, sorry, I got really caught up in messing with you guys. I was on kind of a power trip. I'm definitely with you guys here. I'm chilling out. And then he just goes full dark when he goes when he really goes back against Shinosuke, where he's not doing this weird kind of manic evil where he's just like, no, I hate you, I've always hated you, I fooled you twice about the kind of person I am.
See, and And that's an appropriate application of grim, dark grittiness and evil and all that stuff. I mean, that would have been so cool to see that shift in him versus
what we got,
the kind of crap people usually want to see.
Yeah, no, that's true.
I want my hero to kill people.
Because that's what heroes do.
How about your hero just has, like, really great villains that they can go up against?
Or how about your hero... Here's my thing. Like, I would be much more impressed with Batman if he could sit the Joker down and be like, you clearly have a lot of stuff to talk about. Okay, let's talk. And then at the end, there is no more Joker, not because the Joker is dead, but because the Joker has figured everything out because Batman is supposedly the best at everything, including psychotherapy. There.
Oof. Wow, that's good. That is brilliant.
Yes. And it'll never happen because then there's no more Joker. Because, one, that means there's no more Joker stories, or two, Batman is not the best at everything.
See, the thing is, that wouldn't mean there are no more Joker stories, because DC likes to reset their universe at every opportunity.
Yeah,
pretty much.
But you could make a whole year-long thing out of that,
yes!
With, like, Batman getting into Joker's head, and, like, you could have the setting... Oh my gosh, I cannot believe I'm, like, pitching a Batman comic here. You could have, like, Batman and the Joker, and the Joker's chained up, or they're both sitting at a table or whatever. And, like, that's the setting for the entire 12 issues, you know,
well,
or
just
13 if they
Batman visiting
extra.
Joker at Arkham.
Yeah.
That would be cool, too. And like, they could be talking through all this stuff, and you'd have all these flashbacks and go all over the place.
Yeah, like, you had in-universe ways to do this exact story.
But, you know, you've gonna because the Joker's...
And, I mean, you've got Harley, who is a psychotherapist.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
And who is connected to the Joker.
Huh. DC, if you're listening, this is the thing. Right?
if anyone at DC is listening to this podcast about a niche interest, we're your people.
Yes. Yes, we are. You know, it's funny, us talking about that right now, quick poll. How many of you really, really like Batman? Like, you're totally into it?
It depends on the Batman.
Yes. I've always wanted I like the idea of Batman as the noir hero. Not as the action-adventure hero, the noir hero, who goes and he roots out corruption and helps people with unsolved crime, helps people find justice, and then occasionally fights an evil clown. As opposed to fights lots of evil clowns, has lots of speeches about, I won't kill because it's my code, but I really want to kill because killing is awesome. I don't have to save you.
I don't like the way they portrayed Batman in the past, but there's been certain productions of it that have been really good and have kind of worked on a lot of levels. The Nolanverse stuff, like, it started well but kind of went crazy, and the end is just ridiculous. But, like, things like the Batman animated series they did, like, that kind of stuff really worked. But, yeah, I'm pretty into it, I guess.
I like Batman when he's made for kids. Like,
Adam West is the only live-action Batman I acknowledge.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that movie is the best thing, like, bar none. There is no movie better than CD6 Batman.
Stuff for adults. It just exposes the poverty of imagination that teenagers have about what it is to be an adult.
Okay, all that being said, I would like to make this point. I'm not a Batman fan.
That's good.
I enjoyed the two Michael Keaton movies.
Yeah.
And what was the third one?
Forever.
Was that
Joel Schumacher.
No, it was Val Kilmer.
Joel Schumacher directed. Sorry, that's my.
And that was ridiculous. And then the bat nipples in the Schwarzenegger one with Clooney. Come on. But anyway, like, at that point, it just started getting ridiculous. But there was something that I liked about those a lot, and Batman the Animated Series was great. Probably Mask of the Phantasm is the best Batman movie ever made.
I need to sit down and watch that. I've had it on DVD for ages. I just haven't managed to have a chance to watch it yet.
It's really enjoyable.
Okay, that's good. Is it as good as the Animatrix, or...?
I would say it's better than Animatrix.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Okay.
Yeah, and it has partially, perhaps partially because it has a singular story. It's telling two or three stories, really, but they're all deeply intertwined, and I think the anthology nature of the Animatrix threw me
a
little
bit. Okay, that's fair enough.
So, might just be a preference thing. But the three of us aren't huge Batman fans, like some people are. And four of us, I'm sorry. Yeah. I guess, why was I not including...
You weren't including one of us, and because you didn't.
Anyway, but like, we came up with a really fun idea, something really interesting and compelling to do with Batman. I'm not sure, well, I don't think fans, I think there's a great argument to be made against fans of a thing making that thing. And I'm not saying Sanjo's a huge writer fan, and therefore he shouldn't be able to write. But Urobuchi was a huge fan, and he did terrible things with Kamen Rider.
Urobuchi's just a bad writer in general,
I've seen this go both ways, because in Doctor Who, as I'll always keep going back to, Russell T. Davis, when he bought this show back, was a massive fan, and he bought it back in a way that was consistent and very compelling, and did a lot of things the show really needed to do. But then, as it went on, it kind of morphed into a bit more of kind of... not fan service, but almost, in a sense.
I think the thing is letting increasing generations of fans continue to do a long thing with a franchise over the course of a long time.
Yeah,
I think is the problem.
I'll give you that. Yeah, definitely.
Like having people who care about a franchise work on a franchise is great. That's a great thing. Because then you get people who really love it and are really willing to think about it and try things. Mm. But if you let every fan of a thing work on a thing, you're going to get the fans who are also not very good at creating.
Because isn't this one of the criticisms of is it Angel in the later seasons or like the later seasons of Buffy, is that they started kind of pandering to what fans were writing in fan fiction, and that was quite why it kind of went off the edge. I don't know, I've heard that as a criticism, but I don't know which seasons that refers to or what that refers to. I just heard it on another podcast, and I don't know if it's true or not. So I know
at points in Naruto the author was like taking into consideration the results of character polls as to what he did with the story in parts.
Oh no, don't do that. Like,
I don't remember like the extent of it and like what exactly came of that because I never read the series. But I remember that being a thing that like fans of it that I was friends with complained about.
Well, I don't want to let this get too out of control. Maybe this is a writer jump.
Probably, yeah. Half the show is a writer jump. Right.
I actually did pull out like 35.
Probably,
minutes,
yeah.
Only 35. Already,
so, yeah.
Oh man, we're slipping, Aleph. So, our ratio is going down.
I think at this point, though, we're entering into our third hour.
Aren't we? Yeah. Like, I've still got loads to say about themes. I really want to know what you think about it. So I'm just, oh man, like. I think
this is a good idea for a writer jump. Right up there with
90s writers.
Like Kamen Rider. Like,
oh, that's like a whole day like me talking about like I love the superhero fiction and everything
and
to do with that.
Then we can have a writer jump about fans writing and the many, 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 many problems inherent therein.
Mm.
Yeah, I think maybe I like what Sona was starting to say about like the type of fan.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to do because like if you look at like have any of you seen Panty and Stocking with Garter Belts?
No.
Episodes.
Okay, like that's because that was like kind of made by people who like were big fans of animation, and it works kind of really well in that respect. So I just I think you see as many bad examples, you see good examples. It's quite mixed, but as you say, I think it does depend on the kind of fans you get. Because
go on.
No, I lost what I was going to say there. I completely forgot. I'm not sure where I was about to go.
I have a kernel of something, and again, we need to walk away from this because it's just going to get out of hand. I can see it now. I think fans who enjoy something and want to take it on as a power fantasy and want to write the thing that they're a fan of as a power fantasy, they will not make something good.
No.
They're there to reproduce the thing wrote.
The thing about that is, I find Urobuchi as an example of this, is they're just going to rewrite the thing as they interpret it.
Mm.
Where you have Urobuchi rewriting Ryuki as he interpreted it, and then into Madoka, and then rewriting kind of early Heisei as he interpreted it into Gaim. Where he's not really trying to expand on what Ryuki was and on what Fize and Agito were. Where if you have fans of things who are really like critical and analytical of things and want to try things kind of in the realm of this thing they know and love, you get really interesting sort of things, such as Aikawa's work on Blade. Everyone take a shot.
I think one of the problems, like, I don't think it's just the power fantasy thing. I won't say any more about this, but because we need to probably move on. But like, the one thing I will say is I don't think it's necessarily about just it being about a power fantasy. I think if anyone writes anything with like kind of sole purpose in mind, which is I'm going to push this one thing to the exclusion of all else, that's what leads to problems, is this kind of like sole focus issue that you have. But yeah, we should probably move on. So, and we're back with some audience participation. Now, we asked the questions on Tumblr, I believe, earlier, of the questions, Tumblr and Twitter, so, you know, multimedia, multi-platform, we're all good at that here.
We're
so,
everywhere.
So we'll repeat them as we go along, because obviously, you know, it's been a long time since we asked question one. I mean, this episode might be like 3 or 4 hours. Who knows? We're really sorry to Amit and his editing, but he's gonna have to like edit a lot of this. So yeah, the cutting room floor for this episode is gonna be so fun. We'll have to release these as like bloopers or something at some point.
We'll see when we start the Patreon, then we can start releasing stuff like that for backers.
Give us
money. Hear us babble.
It could be worse. Anyway, so we'll read the questions and then kind of read the answers that we got as well, and we'll kind of vaguely discuss them, I guess. So I'll read the questions and then you two can alternate the answers. Does that work? Can we do that?
Sounds good.
That's fine.
Cool. So question one: how does episode 35 work for you? Are you satisfied with the fact that so much focus is being put on the SCU? What do you think about Sanjo through Nera making the SCU members appear part of a conspiracy by having provided instances where they were in close contact with Roimudes?
Swirly Jiffy answered, I really like the callbacks to the early focus episodes. It makes everything feel a lot of cohesive and makes the SCU super important to the framework of the narrative, something they haven't always done in the series.
That's true. Right. That too is a right. thing they have too not always done in the series.
That's true. Yeah.
I did
also really enjoy like having those callbacks to those specific moments that were all really personal things for the cast.
Like, it definitely the cohesive thing. Like, it made the whole series kind of feel like more than a Monster of the Week format in a way that has been kind of lacking in the past, I felt. It pulled the whole thing together and was kind of like, these episodes really had purpose, which I think was a really good thing to pull across, I guess. So, question two. Does anyone have anything to say about lying to Kiriko about Albano, as he's now called?
As we have decided to call him.
It was only because I misread it the first time. It's my fault. But
I also misread it until like we started saying it out loud, and then I'm like, oh, okay, I see exactly what's going on here. But I also have a lot of problems with reading comprehension in some ways.
Okay, that's fair enough. Yeah.
Wait, I can read and comprehend and retain things fine, but I also have problems processing some letters that look similar, such as capital I in a sans serif font and a lowercase l.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I
very clearly transpose words and letters.
Yes, no, that I can understand. I just completely misread it the first time. I was like, I thought it was just some reference to something I'd never seen, so I would never get. But no, so he's now called Albano. That's our official decision. If such things are real. Anyway, so Swirly Jiffy answered question two. While I'm not happy with it, I did like how Chase is clearly over the whole idea and is using it as leverage to get Go to stop moping and help fight again. Which is an interesting point of view.
Yeah. Chaser Mock says, I remember someone in TV Tropes comparing this situation with the Judge episodes. Basically, Go's intention is to prevent Kiriko ending up ostracized by people because her father is the creator of the Roimutes. But is it? Is he even her father? Because she knows the name of the person who created the Roimutes, but clearly does not associate that name with the person who is her father.
Also, okay, how is her not knowing that going to prevent it? Like, if everybody knows, someone will be like, here's this Bono guy. Let's check records. Oh, he has kids. It's those two kids. Those two kids are his kids. Let's ostracize them. Her not knowing that is not going to stop that.
No, and also you'd think that, like, they do some, like, being police officers, they might do some research when they found out, like, the names of people and try and look them up. And, you know, if he had kids, like, I mean, he could conceal it from official records, but, like, that wouldn't be, you wouldn't think that would be amazingly easy to conceal the fact that you'd had two children, but who knows. I'm thinking this is more going to go down the line of adopted father, but I don't really know.
It doesn't totally make sense for him to be adopted either, though.
No, exactly. No, well, nothing.
Just because of the way he and Kiriko are portrayed together.
Yeah, because they've definitely, if they were adopted, they were both adopted very young. They've definitely been together for, like, a long time. As a sibling.
This is very, very confusing as to who is related to who by blood.
I really don't know if they're going to address. I hope they do, because, like, it's just a really weird thing not to address, but we haven't seen signs of it so far. We had one more answer to that from Joe.
Joe said, I've already discussed the problem of the show having its writers lie to Kiriko, she has, previous episodes, and decide what they think she needs to know, but I find it especially bad that Chase has agreed to lie to her again when he knows the first time was wrong, and I'm concerned that the show will make out Shinosuke to be the innocent party and the, quote, only, end quote, one who treats Kiriko well when he has chosen to lie too by not telling her that Bono is her and Go's father. Even though the show is going with the, but it's not his secret to share, excuse, he's still in the wrong. And I'm right.
Which he is. No one in this show is free of sin.
I'm still not sure
Bono is her father. I don't know whose father he is at this point. I barely even believe he's Go's father. But did we teach Chase that it was bad to lie the first time? There were no consequences when he lied the first time.
No one
also,
really...
this is making me wonder, is Go a robot?
Why not?
Is he the perfect android, and then Chase is the crap one?
Wonders.
I don't know. He's not a
robot because he was a child once.
Robots don't grow.
Yeah. Well, maybe they do.
Or do they?
He's really good.
What do I know?
The weird thing with Chase is that there's no one like. There's no one for him to like run his ideas past to be like, is this actually a good thing or not? Because he's just kind of exists in this world. Like when he was with the Roimutes, like he had like a chain of command and he had people higher than him. But now he's just like, I am the authority of morality. So there's no one like.
He could run it past Tomari. He could run it past Shinosuke, but he doesn't.
They don't like live together or they don't even work together.
Where does Chase live?
He doesn't. He just goes around the city looking for crime.
Well, I guess he's a robot. He doesn't need to sleep. So
does he need to eat? Have we established that? Have we seen him eat?
I don't think so.
I just like the idea of him hanging around in ramen bars.
I mean, he probably could eat if he wanted to, but I don't think he needs to.
Maybe it'd be like the Crystal Gem's reaction to eating, or also rather Pearl's reaction to eating. You crush the food in your mouth. What?
you, speaking of body horror, like, when listening to her describe it, it's like, wow, that is actually really disgusting. I never thought about it before.
Very true.
But I mean, like, I don't know when it's been told to Chase that lying is wrong. Yeah, because he lied about Go being brainwashed, and then nothing.
And then
like,
he was
technically
right.
He was right.
He maybe he thinks he has god powers now. Maybe he's a robot who's invented magical thinking. That'd be an interesting thing.
That would be
no. I mean, magical thinking is a part of cognitive development. I mean, it just happens. I mean, it put him at the emotional maturity and understanding of the world of a 5-year-old, but.
But then that's kind of what
he should be.
That'd be fair. Like, he has magical thinking, and he'll just go around telling lies, hoping that that will make the best version of the world come about. That would be a great thing to do at any point that was not episode 36 of a 48 episode series.
Well, I think we can agree that there's been some of this, that a certain proportion of this series has been sort of wasted time, so perhaps it would have been cool if they'd explored it earlier, as you say. So, question 3. Did you enjoy seeing the dynamics change in heart-brain-medic relationship?
FMA245 answered, it was very satisfying to see Brain get his revenge on Medic. I think Heart gets a sick enjoyment from seeing his friends fight amongst themselves. I'm also calling BS on Heart being taken down by an iPad. That's a pretty decent thing to call BS on,
honestly. That's very true. It's very true.
Goddad iPad is, like, again, Goddad iPad is scary.
He did do some completely BS stuff in these episodes as a whole. I do think it's funny bringing up Heart getting a sick enjoyment from seeing his friends fight, because at the end of 36, Medic is torturing Brain. She has him completely vulnerable as a number and is just like crushing him and twisting him, and Heart's just like, oh, this is fine. This is absolutely normal. There's nothing wrong with this.
I did laugh when his core was like running away crying. Like I don't know, it was quite funny. But the other thing I've just thought of actually now, like when right at the end of 36, when Heart was talking, he was like, oh, Bono's become a nuisance or whatever he says. Like, I was kind of like, I don't know, it seems like Bono's been holding out on them or something. I don't know. It's weird. Like, the dynamic
again
between
brings me back to Bono having been sentient in this iPad the whole time. This Bono's a weird factor.
Yeah,
that
no one should have
come up before now.
Oh, definitely. Question 4. Is it a contrivance that Shinosuke apparently chose to untransform while chasing Neera, who, granted, had no more ability to transform as far as Shinosuke knew, to arrest him? Should he have been dehensioned by Brain's attack instead?
Swirly Jiffy answered, I think it was somewhat of a contrivance, but they have to somewhat stick to the cop drama formula, even though this is a superhero show. He probably would have been dehensioned by Brain if it hadn't been a big plot fight. And yeah, I think that was basically our...
Yeah, I think that's pretty much the thing we came to. Like, it would have... I would have liked it if he dehensioned himself, as I said, but... they went with what they went with, and, you know, it could have been better. I think that was the general
principle. The list of problems in this show, that one is, like, barely even a footnote.
Yeah, that's true. Although, if we subtract Go, the list of problems decreases exponentially. It's great.
It's true!
Like, that's... And it's really bad from a writing point of view that like that all these problems lay at the feet of one character, but like
like it kind of worked in Fies. Like every single problem is solved. 99% of problems don't even happen if Kusaka isn't there.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, like intra character relationship problems, you do still get Laundry Boy and Swan Girl. Because Kusaka doesn't affect them at all, so they would still happen. And I guess the overall weird Orphnok plot would still have happened, but you wouldn't have like Takumi and Kiba fighting at all. That would never have happened. And like all of Mari's like going back and forth with people would not have happened without Kusaka. So it worked in Fize. It just doesn't work here.
Oh, that's very... No, that does make a lot of sense. Although, I don't know, I think in Fize it was intentional. It doesn't seem to be intentional here, and I think that's probably the worst part of
it.
Yeah.
So, question five. What do you think may come from this new alliance with Albano?
Swirly Jiffy answered, I'm going to guess that Bano will somehow become the final villain of the series. His reintroduction into the plot will probably also allow us some backstory for Krim as well, since he has been the least developed character in the main cast.
Well,
I don't know about that. I don't know if I'd call Krim less developed than Go, maybe on par with Go. I'd honestly say Kiriko's probably... Of our core five, Shinosuke, yeah. Go, Chase, Krim, Kiriko, I'd probably call Kiriko the least.
Yeah, I think that's...
I don't know, I think... Kiriko, and Go are kind of fighting for the bottom, I think.
The thing is, we don't know any of Kiriko's motivations for anything.
No, that's true.
We don't know why she's a cop. We don't know why... She was saved by Proto Drive, but, like, why did she continue to follow them?
Yeah.
Why did she end up with them in SCU? What feelings does she have about her family? Related to Bano, like, what, we don't really know any of her feelings about anything.
No, although I think one of the problems also is, like, Shinosuke is, like, really high on the scale of development, he's quite high, but then everyone else is, like, occupying the bottom, say, third of the scale. There's a definite disparity between the titular character and everybody else, which I don't think is a great accolade to the show.
No, it's really not. Now, FMA245 submitted, I think Bano will manipulate Go into not trusting Krim,
which is what everyone else is doing.
Yeah,
you know, it'd be a fun, like, you know, now dads will fight through their sons with
dad fights.
Surrogate.
I want to go to the dad fights.
But then Greg would turn up and he would win.
Oh yeah, well no, Greg wins every fight. I will fight behind Greg in the dad wars. I love Greg Universe. Greg is tied with Garnet as my favorite character in this show.
Okay, so question six. Has Go been redeemed?
Swirly Jiffy answered, kinda, I guess. He at least is being more of a straightforward hero again, though I would have liked a slight callback to his earlier characterization to show that he has dealt with a lot of his past problems. We'll see.
I don't think he has dealt with a lot of his past problems.
I don't think he even knows they are problems. I think he thinks that's a totally appropriate way to treat people, which is worrying.
And I kind of wonder if the writers don't also.
I don't know.
Just saying.
It's a fair comment. FMA245 submitted, not even close. He's still keeping Albano a secret and still doesn't trust Chase.
Yeah.
Yeah, can't really disagree.
I mean, those things aside, he hasn't made up for any of the things he did in the past 30 episodes. And he did some really jerky stuff.
And he's
to his sister.
He's not apologized to anybody.
No, he hasn't.
I just have to replay that scene of Kiriko slapping him, like, over and over again. That'll make up for it somehow.
Joe...
At least give me a moment of, like,
At least there's that. Joe said, no. Go is still lying, still keeping secrets, still holding a vendetta against Chase, despite knowing Chase isn't bad, still hurting Kiriko, the list goes on. Which it does.
Yeah.
He still pushed Kiriko twice. Put his hands on her more than once. Not okay with that.
And then was
very
all like,
bothered.
Oh no, she fought back.
Oh,
sorry, I'm still like, I'm still a bit mad. Of course, I'm also still mad at like, oh, what's my character motivation? I have to be better than Shinosuke. Wait, no, I have a different
one. Yeah, it was a bit like that. Okay, so episode question 7. Did we have too little Krim as Tridron this episode?
Chaser Mock said, we need more Krim as type Tridron, and maybe an explanation about how Krim can seemingly do what Shinosuke cannot. Which, yeah.
Sure, I mean, I it's reasonable for them to have different fighting styles, but I would like to know how Krim has a fighting style as he is a belt.
When he wasn't a belt, he was a... You're just a scientist.
Yeah, like, I would like to know... I mean, it's... I could believe... If they just said, like, oh, well, Krim, you know, practiced some martial arts just as a way of keeping his mind in shape. I'd be like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's completely reasonable.
Or they do the Matrix thing where they, like, download the programs into his head. Or like with Baymax in Big Hero 6 where they kind of write him the code to make him be a fighter or something. I don't know. Like, that would have been cool.
Any kind of answer as to how he can fight.
Yeah, that would help. Question 8. Is it a failing that only Kiriko showed up at the end of the episode and not the entire SCU?
Swirly Jiffy answered, Kiriko is the main non-rider character in this season, so it makes sense that she would be the one to show up. Maybe Gen could have been there too, given that he's a cop as well, but it didn't destroy the quality of the scene for me.
Joe said, I think they should have all been there. I think having just Kiriko is part of the show's effort to push the idea that she's the main motivation for the writers who all want to protect her happiness. The insert song that debuts this week with all three guys singing has lyrics alluding to them wanting to protect and save her, so maybe it's relating to that. Which...
That is interesting. I hadn't even considered the insert song.
Yeah,
I noticed in the credits there was a new one, but I hadn't... Yeah.
Yeah, no, I noticed there was a new one, but I don't think Overtime subbed the lyrics in.
No, they didn't.
So I have no other way of knowing these lyrics, so that was not a connection that I made.
Fair enough.
So, good.
To be fair, if they had been there, good job on that, Joe, because if they had been there, it is something I would probably agree with you on, because I do like doing that with insert songs. Specifically, Nobody's Perfect.
Is that double?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't actually remember much of the context of how it was used in the series, in spite of the fact that there is literally a whole episode devoted to it. But in Movie War Core specifically, the way it's used is something that I completely overanalyze.
Or analyze just enough.
I don't know. I'm probably the only one giving any thought to the events of Movie War Core, so it's not a good movie.
No, anyway. So, question 9. How do you feel about a Kamen Rider holding a gun on a civilian, no matter how jerky they are? Swirly Jiffy answered, in this case, I think it's the show using cop drama concepts again. I don't think it at all discredits Tomari as a rider, given his intention was never to actually shoot Nira, and he later arrests Nira for his crimes after presenting evidence. Is there any question, does it diminish him as a rider? I don't know.
I wouldn't be okay with this if he was a cop, either.
It really has nothing to do with him being a rider. I'm just not comfortable with the fact that he shot that gun.
I agree. My thoughts haven't changed since we talked about it. It just felt very out of place. It definitely wasn't the way I expected the episode to go with him shooting, and so I wonder.
The thing is, like, the idea of using cop drama concepts, I clearly need to watch more cop dramas because they're all great. I love cop dramas, but I'm thinking specifically back to Boss. And maybe I'm not remembering something, but I can't remember any scene where Erika would... Like, I can't imagine Erika shooting the gun if she had been in Shinosuke's place. I can't remember the name of the woman in Koshonen, which is another cop drama that I watched. And I can't imagine her shooting the gun either. And, like, that's really wherein the problem lies for me. I can't imagine any lead in a cop drama shooting the gun in that scene.
I mean, even like we've discussed earlier, like Law and Order SVU is kind of a moral car crash.
Mm.
Like, even Stabler doesn't shoot at people. Like, he might threaten them, he might, you know, punch them a whole bunch, which, not a fan. Not a fan! Pulling a trigger, even more not a fan.
Yeah, I don't know. But it kind of negates the whole, like, concept of justice, because there's no going back from that, and, like, he's the one deciding, you know, where the justice comes from. So it's kind of, you know.
And the thing is, at the beginning of the scene, he outright says, I'm not going to shoot you, I'm going to arrest you.
Yeah, it's kind of
admittingly, he doesn't shoot him, but boy,
no, but, like, he outright says, like, I'm not going to do the thing you want, I'm going to do what a cop is supposed to do.
Yeah.
And then, like, a minute later, he's going against that.
And I mean, the whole officer's pride thing has been, like, a big thing for Shinosuke anyway. So it's kind of strange that he wouldn't cling to that principle when it was important to him, or you'd think so anyway. But maybe that's the point they were making, I don't know. Hard to tell. Okay, so, final question. Was Nero a worthy foe or just a distraction?
Swirly Jiffy answered, I really liked him. I think they took a couple of solid character concepts and added depth to a sometimes lacking story concept of the dead parent. He was also super fun to see in the show since he started, and it's clear the actor had tons of fun, which is true, that is very clear.
Yeah.
I think he also represents the idea that the competency level of villains will grow and make them more dangerous as the series reaches its conclusion. I don't think the competency level of the villains was ever really in question, though. Like, Brain and Heart have always been a threat.
Medic was, like, she just has an agenda that is completely unrelated to the cops, but she's still competent at what she does.
Yeah.
I agree. If we'd seen more of her, then I'd probably make a better judgment, but yeah, I agree.
FMA 245 submitted both a worthy foe and a distraction for the other Roymudes, which,
I mean that's pretty much what we were saying as well. Is kind of in the way that he's being used by the Roymudes as almost as a sideshow, kind of, because he allows Brain to attain his ultimate evolution and then is kind of almost discarded by him, except he needs him for this plan because he's the only like link they have left into the police. So yeah, it's kind of, he's both a distraction and villainous at the same time, in a sense. Okay, so that's, I guess, all the listener feedback, and I'm probably now going to have to go because it's like, of course, 1 a.m. here, and I have to work at 8, so it's going to be a fun night. So you guys can feel free to finish this off. I don't know if you want to talk about anything else, but yeah, I'll I'm probably have to drop out.
Right on. Have fun.
Yeah.
I shall attempt. I'll attempt to. Alright, I'll see you later, guys.
Later.
Bye.
You can reach us through the show's inbox, uncommoncastrx@gmail.com, or interact individually with us on Twitter. I run @uncommoncastrx, also @trialofheroes. Aleph is @needsmoreAleph. Jonathan is @theimposter. And Sono is @mamafriesmeal or @sonoyourface. You can keep track of what we're doing by checking out our Tumblr, uncommonrx.tumblr.com, or by following us on our website, trialofheroes.wordpress.com. The Uncommon Cast RX is part of the Toll Network, bringing you analysis with teeth.